It is 10 o'clock. This is January 15th, Tuesday morning, regular Board of Supervisors meeting. I want to thank everyone for being here this morning. And we will go ahead and get started, as we always do, with the Pledge of Allegiance. Those who are scared to join the committee. Recognition of the Story County 2018 Years of Service Award. And we actually held the recognition breakfast on January 10th. This room was packed, overflowing, as we had breakfast for employees and we recognized Years of Service and gave out awards. I will review these names today. We did not have every employee at that meeting on January 10th. Are there any Story County employees in the room who missed the recognition ceremonies and the breakfast? Okay, all right. Margaret, then, I'll recognize you first. We'll shake the hand. We don't have your award, okay?
I've got it.
And then you've got it already. All right. And then we'll go ahead and I'll read the names afterwards. So Margaret James is being recognized, come on up right now, yeah, for 25 years of service. So we'll go ahead and let's take the photo now. We'll come on down to you, though. Congratulations, then we'll read off the rest of the names.
And Margaret is with Environmental Health.
I'm going coffee today.
Thank you. Attorney's office. He's in the back of the room, but already got his award also. Chris Andringa in the auditor's office. Corey Davis with the sheriff's office. Sean Fletcher with the attorney's office. Jerry Kruger with Secondary Road. Sue Austin, attorney's office. Andrew Nowlin, Secondary Road. Kevin Norris, auditor's office. Sherry Sinclair, Sheriff's Office. Brett Sink, Sheriff's Office. At 10 years, Dylan Combs, Sheriff's Office. Russ DeWall, Conservation. Levi Hansen, Sheriff's Office. Nicholas Lenny, Sheriff's Office. Kyle Thompson, Sheriff's Office. Jessica Reynolds, Attorney's Office. Jeff Zimmerman, Secondary Road. At 15 years, Joel Ahrens, Information Technology, Gary Backus, Sheriff's Office, Vanessa Borwick, Treasurer's Office, Diane Hobart, Sheriff's Office, Randy Steffler, Sheriff's Office, Alyssa Wignall, Board of Supervisors. I think Alyssa's sitting in the back too. Okay. And Josh Webster, Sheriff's Office, for 20 years of service. John Eichel, Facilities Management. Leanne Harder, Board of Supervisors. Leanne's in the back. Here, she walk out for a minute? Okay. Oh, there she is. Okay, thank you. And Roger Holland, Secondary Road. Marcy Hunter Montgomery, Sheriff's Office. Darla Ingham, Board of Supervisors. Kathy Johnson, Community Services. Jerry Keyes, Conservation. James Zimmer, Secondary Road. Darren Moon, I think Darren's here also somewhere, Secondary Road. Paul Austin, Secondary Road. Melissa Spencer, Emergency Management. Todd Sullivan, Facilities Management. Amy Yoakum, Conservation. Carla Webb, Community Services. Joining in 25 years, Paul Fitzgerald, Sheriff's Office, standing right over there.
I think everybody could see it in the uniform.
Joan Kinder, Sheriff's Office, and Sue McCaskey, Animal Control. We also have two employees who celebrated 30 years of service with the county. Artis Baldwin, Treasurer's Office, and Janet Stoll, Sheriff's Office. Please join us in clapping for them. So the next thing that we're going to do is we are going to consider a proclamation declaring January as Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention and Awareness Month. And we have, I believe, three members, did you say, George?
Four,
okay, of the committee here. So I'm going to start by inviting any or all of the committee members to come up to the microphone and talk a little bit about the slavery and human trafficking prevention and awareness.
Good morning and good news. Happy New Year and congratulations to Linda and Rick on their election to the Board of Supervisors. My name is George Blitzos. I am representing the Iowa Network Against Human Trafficking and Slavery. I tell you a little bit about what we're doing and how appreciative we are for the proclamation today. We'll ask. We can take a photo, and I'll have several of our board members and local law enforcement who are fighting hard against human trafficking in our county, Story County. So the network against human trafficking and slavery was Iowa's first, and it's still the only statewide nonprofit exclusively committed to ending trafficking in the state. We're a collaboration of regional groups. There are six different anti-human trafficking regional groups. They all have a seat on our board of directors. And then we have a lot of the agencies providing services on our board. And I'm happy to announce that we have, out of the 20 board members, there are four from Story County. We should be very proud of that. Including a professor from Iowa State who teaches human trafficking, myself, Jan Barron, who leads protecting our children locally in Story County, and then we also have the sheriff and Sergeant Quinn. So we are very well represented in Story County in the fight against human trafficking. So I want to say on behalf of the network and all of our local nonprofit supporters and providers and allies, thank you for joining the fight against trafficking. And to make people aware that trafficking, both sex and labor trafficking, is happening right here in Story County, all across our state, all across our nation, and all across the globe. It's the fastest growing criminal offense in the world, second only to drug trafficking as far as income that's produced by the traffickers and selling and the bodies and the time and the labor of innocent victims. We were formed to work collaboratively and bring state agencies together with local nonprofits and regional groups. And our goal is to abolish human trafficking in all its forms here in Iowa. It doesn't belong in our state. We all think that slavery is a thing of the past, but it isn't. It is still going on. We have taken on a number of statewide projects, one big, all big carried out here in Story County as well, One is to train volunteers to go into hotel and motels and do a one-hour training with all the employees. There are about 32 hotels and motels in Missouri County, and 25 of them have accepted the training and have the staff training. And there's a lot of turnover in that business, so we're now starting to offer a second training. We also have a statewide project going on where we're trying to root out these illicit prostitution and human trafficking businesses that are going under the guise of massage therapy. And the legislature, we worked really hard on some public policy changes, improving the law. One of the things that passed 2 years ago was in an unusual move by the legislature to give local control to the cities and counties to now oversee massage businesses, and it was because of the epidemic of, and the growing number of illicit businesses under the guise and of massage therapy, and actually places where human beings were being trafficked and people from the community and the public were buying sex. And it's very destructive. So since that went into effect, 14 cities and cities have adopted ordinances. We are still working on an ordinance for the city of Ames, and after Ames passes it, we'll be coming to the Board of Supervisors, because there are massage businesses outside the city limits. We are launching this week a new project, and we're putting these stickers up. These are stickers where you just pull off the back and you put it in the public restroom of could be the jail, the courtroom, the Walmart, the play, truck stops. The, Thursday, we have the governor signing a proclamation similar to the proclamation you're giving us today, and we're going to announce that we're making 5,000 of these available, and we're asking people in the community who would like to volunteer to put them up, always getting the permission of the business or the manager of the business. And we like to get these up in women's restrooms all across the state of Iowa, so we can call on your help. And Sheriff is going to be putting some up, and we'd like to have some put up in county buildings. And with that, I have just one more thing. We have a couple of new posters about where to call for help, and also how to, with information on how to recognize trafficking and where to report it. And I'd like to ask the supervisors to put this up here.
Yeah, absolutely.
With that, I'll conclude and would like to answer any questions you have. Great. I want to thank you once again for declaring this month human trafficking, slavery and human trafficking prevention and awareness month.
Thank you for that. Now, Lieutenant Flynn, Sergeant, I promoted her. Oh, okay. And Sheriff Fitzgerald, since you are also members of the group, did you want to say anything additional?
So I just say the work that George is doing, we're very much in support of. He's led a tremendous effort, and George, being the tip of the spear, is always one that's able to gain great confidence.
I think I think we all agree with that, probably we've worked with him. All right, I will go ahead, if it's okay with the board, and read the proclamation. Okay. Whereas the United States was founded upon the principle that all people are created with the unalienable right to freedom, and added the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, making slavery illegal. Whereas slavery within the United States today is often found in the form of forced labor and sex trafficking, which weakens our social fabric, increases violence and organized crime, and debases our humanity. Whereas this heinous crime is found within our own community. Whereas the Iowa Network Against Human Trafficking has been working for 13 years to abolish all forms of human trafficking through education, volunteerism, advocacy, and collaboration. Whereas every business, community organization, faith community, family, and individual can make a difference by choosing products that are not made by forced labor, by working to protect our young people from sexual exploitation, by addressing the problem of internet sex trafficking and pornography, and by becoming more aware of the problem and possible solutions. Therefore, we, the members of the Story County Board of Supervisors, do hereby proclaim the month of January as Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention and Awareness Month, and encourage all our citizens to become more informed on this growing problem, to be vigilant and report suspicious activity, and to work towards solutions to end trafficking in all its forms in our community. If you see something that doesn't look right, take action and call the National Human Trafficking Hotline at 888-373-7888.
Yeah, so I would move approval of the proclamation as read, and I would just add a huge thank you to Dr. Jordan and everybody on the committee and outside the committee that's working to stop this atrocity. Thank you.
I will second the motion and send the thank you.
If there's no further discussion, I will go ahead and call for the vote. Supervisor Sanders.
Aye.
Supervisor Merkin.
Aye.
Supervisor Olson.
Aye.
Thank you very much for bringing it to us, and let's take a photo, okay? Long report, and they'd like to speak now. I invite him to come up, or you can speak about anything else you would like to impose for him. No, going on.
Well, I have a question. Actually, this is a public comment period now. Yeah, I have one item. But
is it the Longview Park or something else?
Longview Park?
Is it the possible appeal of the Longview Park / Henry family?
Oh, yes. Yes, I have.
Okay, so we'll take those separately. We're headed
that's
back.
Fine. That's fine.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you. I know, it's a little confusing. We tell you can talk about anything you want, and then we don't let you talk about what you want to talk about, right? So let's go to the minutes.
Yeah, I'll move approval of the January 8th minutes.
Okay. Sanders?
Aye.
Merchant?
Aye.
Olson? Aye. Consideration of personnel action?
Move approval.
Okay. And so, Sanders?
Aye.
Merchant?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Consent agenda?
Again, approval.
Merchant? Okay. Sanders?
Aye.
Merchant?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Now, we do have a public hearing item. Now, this is related to a conservation item. So, Mike Cott, Director of Conservation, is coming up to the speaker now. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Please keep that close.
Yeah, apparently they're having some problems with sound.
How's that?
That's good.
It'll be very friendly. Okay.
So this morning we've got item in front of you to consider preferred plan specifications, contract repair damages for the hard violations that the trail sustained this last summer due to some heavy rainfall we got. So this is a standard item that we need to go out for bids to this because we anticipate the amount of this contract exceeding the public bidding threshold. FEMA is a partner in this, and they will be sharing 85% of the cost. We're asking today that you release this project to get bids on that, and that you set February 5th as the bid opening date for that project.
I'll open up to the board for questions, discussion before we hold the public hearing part. Okay. All right. Thank you. We will now open the public hearing. Would any members of the public who wish to come forward on this particular item care to come up and speak now? All right. There does not appear to be anyone who would wish to comment. I am closing the public hearing. We'll come back to the board. What would you like to do?
Yeah, I'll move approval of the proposed plan specifications and form of contract to repair the damage to Heart of Iowa Nature Trail and ask that we get bids to come back here on February 5th.
Second motion.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, I don't think.
I said bid opening on February 5th. Yep.
Okay. No further discussion. Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Olson? Aye. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank
that
you,
was very
good.
Okay. We now go to what is item 8.1 on the agenda. Director. Discussion and consideration of appealing the issuance of a preliminary construction permit to Longview Park LLC by the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. I'll just talk a little bit about the background here. The board of supervisors looked at these three applications for the three sites on December 11th, and the board voted 2-1 to pass on with a recommendation of approval to the DNR. There now has been a request to take a look at an appeal, and with that, I will turn it over to Supervisor Merkin, who requested that this be adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. As Chairperson Olson said, there was a 2-1 vote on December 11th to forward the request to the Department of Natural Resources with a recommendation to grant. I was not on the board at that time. I do realize, however, many of you were here for that meeting, and many of you who were here asked for not to recommend. Then on January 7th, Story Town received notice that the Iowa Department of Natural Resources was issuing preliminary construction permits along the Minnesota 3 site. The notice informed us that the county has 14 days from that date, January 7th, to appeal, to notify the DNR if we decide to appeal the permit. I ask that the petition be placed on this meeting's agenda as this is the only regularly scheduled board supervisors meeting between now and this wonderful first. And I want to thank everyone who's contacted the board on this topic via email and apologize that I did not acknowledge all of your correspondence personally. There were several emails, quite frankly, and I wasn't able to get to them all, but we do appreciate your comments. And I have some additional comments, but I will reserve them until after we send some members as well. Thank you for being here. Okay.
Supervisor Sanders, do you care to comment?
Yeah, so just a couple questions. So I want to make sure I understand what we're trying to accomplish today and frankly what we're able to accomplish today. So I'm concerned that this appears to be being portrayed as some kind of redo for what we did in December. So in December, we had gone through the process of receiving these applications. We had had our staff conduct the scoring for those applications. They came back and very clearly told us at that time that these applications passed the scoring standards as set by state law. The board that was then seated took action on that, as you know, by a 2-1 vote to recognize that they passed the scoring as set forth by state law and sent it forward to DNR. So since then, DNR has taken those applications and issued preliminary approval, and now, as I understand it, there's a separate mechanism, separate from what happened in December, for the county to make some kind of appeal to the Environmental Protection Council, but that is more of a legal procedure, not a resolution procedure or anything like that that we dealt with in December. And I just, Supervisor Olson, I just want to make sure that we're very clear with everybody here that this is two entirely separate issues. Right, you've got the issue that we dealt with in December, and I absolutely understand that a lot of people were not happy with where we came in, where the board came in December, but today is not a redo of what happened in December.
And I'm going to look back at our civil counsel here. If you'd like to confirm that, it probably carries a little more weight than if I confirmed that.
Ethan Anderson, County Attorney's Office. Rick is correct. This is not a redo December 11th construction permit hearing. This is authorized by administrative code for the board to discuss whether or not they wish to appeal that preliminary construction. So this is simply whether or not there's legal grounds to appeal. And I would agree with Supervisor Sanders that this is more of a legal discussion than it is necessarily a public discussion of what the public hearing was last time on December 11th, and that has a chance of offering.
And because of that, now, if I might, I would like to remind anyone who's coming up to speak today that the topic needs to be limited to whether the county should actually do this administrative procedure, which we're calling an appeal, but it has another name in the code, correct? A petition for standing before the Environmental Protection Commission?
No, it's designated an appeal in administrative code.
Okay.
Any challenge to appeal would be a petition for review in the district court.
Thank you. All right. So narrow as far as what's being addressed.
So would it be appropriate while we've got Ethan here for me to ask him a couple questions that I have as we get started?
You absolutely.
So I heard you refer to this. even, which is how I view it, that when we had the public hearing, that was the opportunity in the process as outlined by the state law and in the master maker process to receive public input, which we took and forwarded all of it to DNR along with our recommendation, along with our scoring master matrix. You referred to this as a legal process that we're talking about going through, issuing some kind of appeal to the decision that DNR has since made. Is that right?
That's correct.
And so my question to you would be, so you've reviewed all of this. Do you find that we have legally sufficient grounds to offer this appeal? I mean, what is your recommendation to us, I think, is what I would ask you from a legal perspective.
And I have a question for the county attorney. Given that we've already went into closed session last week on that, I, at least, have been, was instructed by the county attorney to, that was part of our confidential discussion. Are you still holding to that opinion?
Yes, for the reason we discussed in closed session with the board, it's still my recommendation that there are no legal grounds to proceed with the meeting.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Now, given that, yes, there is a narrow scope, Supervisor Merkin had asked for community input. I agree. I'm a big champion of community input. But due to time constraints, the narrowness of this topic, I'm going to ask that any comments be focused on the appeal of that. So if you have general comments about what you think about the master matrix, general comments about how the situation is in Iowa right now, or even Story County, number of tables, et cetera, that would be much better expressed on January 22nd. And on January 22nd at 7 o'clock, the supervisors have arranged, and thank you, by the way, to the county staff and the Nevada Public Safety Department, who are here today and will be there on the 22nd, just in case anybody gets a little too passionate. And we're going to talk about the master matrix. But today we are talking specifically about the possibility of the county appealing on the DNR's issuance of the permit. So it's a very narrow scope that we are under today. So with that then, if there are no further questions or comments.
So I would just ask you for further clarification. I so appreciate what you just said for us. Really appreciate the opportunity for us to talk about this, but I want to make sure we're all talking about the same thing. So if our civil attorney is telling us this is a legal issue, should our comments be focused on what the legal issue is that would allow us to forward an appeal?
It's my humble non-attorney opinion that would be appropriate. I'll give an example. I sent back to someone. Don't say there's too much manure being dumped in the state of Iowa, but if you want to comment on the quantity of manure, would I be correct that that would be part of what we might put in an appeal? Ethan? Should I stay away from that too?
I talked to the board because you're aware of it, and you referenced it that what we discussed in closed session is confidential.
Yeah.
And that needs to remain confidential.
Okay. Would you like to help me in answering Supervisor Sanders' question about where the scope about what comments from the board would be appropriate to bring forward today?
I think it's clear under administrative code when it discusses the appeal rights of the county. The appeal rights discuss legal grounds for basis to appeal. And that's the burden that needs to be satisfied by the county. That's what we discussed in closed session. To the extent those the comments offered today impact directly on that analysis, that's useful information for more TAP. Again, I'm one person that conducted my legal review to the best of my ability and gave my legal opinion. There's other legal opinions that need to be offered for the board to have a full analysis, and involve me consider that analysis.
Okay. Thank you. So I heard anything that would be useful to the county in the particular appeal, if it were so granted, or if there are any, if there's anyone out there, preferably an attorney, who has done some legal analysis and doesn't have a different or an additional supplemental opinion. So that's the ground rules here.
Yeah, so can I try to state it a different way and see if we're all on the same page?
You may.
What I heard is we need to hear about the legal grounds, if any, for us to send forward this appeal to the Environmental Protection Council. Not, this is not opinions or philosophies or very strong feelings about CAFOs or these particular CAFOs. This is something does not have legal merit, and we need to appeal based on that.
That's correct. I think that anyone would recognize that these types of situations generate strong, emotionally strong, a strong emotional reaction. But again, we would be in, this would be litigation in court. This requires burden of proof. This requires legal ground. And that's what we need to do again.
I'm going to ask the question, but, you know, I've gone too far in the legal strategy here. But to me, I hear this. What I hear is that that if the supervisors or a majority of the supervisors would vote to tell the county attorney's office, we want to appeal this, okay, we want to go to the EPC, that we would be likely breaking ground that has not been entertained before, correct? Because of how limited this is, we might be voting outside the scope of what the appeal process as the law is now allowing.
Yeah, again, we're getting close to our discussion.
Okay, okay. Yeah, that's why I'm trying here.
We'll cut it off. We'll cut it off there.
Okay. All right. With that, okay, I do have some comment cards here. I have some that specifically say appeal to the EPC, and they've indicated a preference. I have a couple that are not clear if they're pro or con, and because they put CAFO, HOGLOT, vote, HOGLOT. So what I think I'd like to do is I'd like to, for the one that I have is against the appeal, and then a couple that are for the appeal. I'll start with those, all right? And then we'll try to figure out where the three I have that it's not clear go. But I'd like to try and alternate comments, if at all possible. So I'm going to go ahead, and I'm going to start with Eric Henry's here, which is... Surprise. Okay.
So, Laura, while Eric's walking, so we received an email from Scott Henry, who has been the one representing all of you. Are you okay if I mention that, or do you want to mention
that? I thought they were going to, but whoever would like to mention it, you can read it.
Okay, I'll just read what we got from Scott yesterday afternoon. Scott said, Laura, Rick, and Linda, I wanted to reach out to you ahead of tomorrow's supervisor meeting, apologizing that I'm unable to attend and participate in the discussion regarding our permits due to a previously scheduled speaking engagement. I will be in Chicago speaking on our farm's conservation efforts at the Trust in Food Symposium as part of my role on the Farmer Advisory Board for the Environmental Defense Fund. My brothers will be there along with Pinnacle to provide a statement on behalf of Longview Court. Should you have any questions beforehand, please feel free to reach out to me. So I didn't reach out, Scott. I didn't have any questions, but I thought it was important that we at least acknowledge that he's been the point person through this, and it's not that he's choosing not to attend today, it's that he was unable.
Correct, and he did inform me of that last week, so this is not something that's come up. Hi, Eric, and also we're going to ask you to do the same thing, be friendly with the microphone. Okay, thank you.
Good morning. My name is Eric Henry, and I'm here today with my brother Kyle from Pinnacle Environmental, representing Longview Port, LLC. Scott wishes to be here this morning as well, but as previously mentioned, he is speaking in Chicago at the Trust and Food Symposium about the conservation efforts our farm has adopted over the last 10 years. Integrating livestock, this project is an extension of those efforts as we hope to make our operation more environmentally friendly and sustainable by using manure as an alternative fertilizer source to commercially synthetic fertilizers currently used. It was brought to our attention last week while watching news coverage of a community meeting organized by CCI that the Story County supervisors were considering appealing our permit applications and approvals at this meeting this morning and potentially passing a moratorium on CAFOs at a special meeting on January 22nd. This came as a surprise to us, as we have made no changes to our permit application or master matrix since we submitted it in November and received approval from this very board. We have received no communication from the Board of Supervisors regarding attendance at any board meeting or any new concerns that would justify or warrant an appeal of Story County's previous approval. We are here today to state for the record that since the board's previous approval, we have made no changes to our permit application or master matrix. Our applications follow the rules laid out by the DNR and Iowa legislature. We have reached out to Board Chair Loris Olson to better understand what new concerns have been raised and if there is anything we could be doing to address such concerns. The only response we received was that under advice from legal counsel, she could not answer our questions. This was frustrating for us as we have tried to be open and transparent throughout this entire process, which includes conversations with neighbors, supervisors, industry experts, media representatives, and many others. We even put our phone number in the paper. Since December's level approval, no one has reached out to us expressing any new concerns regarding our applications. Knowing all of this, we do not understand what warrants an appeal from the supervisors of their own approval and the DNR's approval of this project, other than a politically motivated, frivolous attempt to delay our project, add additional expenses for legal representation at an EPC hearing, continue to drive media attention to the CAFO issue, and to submit our family to undue pressure from groups like CCI. We recommend Story County not appeal to the EPC. We have followed the rules and regulations the law has laid out for a project like this. We have communicated and been transparent every step of the way. The Story County Board of Supervisors have approved this very project. The Iowa DNR has approved this project. Nothing about this project has changed since those approvals. Nothing warrants an appeal. Should the board approve to appeal, we would like to better understand what their reason is for doing so. Thank you.
So, under the expressing support for the board to appeal, I've been handed a couple of different cards, or a couple of different. Is there anyone who feels, first of all, that they have a legal comment based upon legal precedent, legal perspective? So I see the two that just came up. And since John Schneider got up first, I'll go with John first, and then Jennifer Knox later, and then we'll see where we are from there. This is the mic.
Right.
It's your friend.
Okay. Thank you. So, yeah, I'm John Monroe, actually.
Oh, John Monroe.
Yeah, well, I'm married to Wendy.
Yeah, you're Wendy.
And she, at the time we got married, she'd already published in the Yale Law Review. And so at that point, didn't want to confuse bibliographers.
That's okay. I have a different name.
So in any case, I'm John Monroe, 62815 Prairie Winds Drive in Nevada. I see the issue of thinking about it. You know, you need to keep this focus legally. I will say that, first off, my wife and Kim Stevens drafted a letter with 10 points that could be used to think about an appeal. Those points are based on my wife's legal training. Again, she has a law degree from Yale, and while it's not a practicing attorney, is a member of the Iowa Bar. Right. So, I think that the two key things, first off, actually, before we get to that, it's important to remember that the law isn't absolute, right? The law has a system of arguments, but that system, of course, as we know from national level debate, can itself be worked politically one way or another, depending upon the personal interests of whoever might be involved. You know, it's not neutral. It is a method of arguments. All right. So just to point that out. So it's not like you can say, oh, the law says this, therefore I'm not responsible. No, that's not how it works. You make an argument one way or another using the tools that are provided. All right. So I would say that in this letter, there are a couple of grounds for appeal that are immediately present. One is that I believe the statute about describing the Board of Supervisors' decision on this question of whether to approve a CAFO or not, it says that the Board shall take into account public comment, right? So a reason to deny approval is public outcry against the project. That was ignored, I think, pretty clearly at the meeting where this is approved, in that, you know, the meeting itself was structured so that people had to wait for an incredibly long time. The meeting was packed. There wasn't really much preparation for the number of people who came and expressed opinions. As a result of that, you know, you have a situation where the outcry against was very clear, and yet the board nevertheless voted to approve. And I think that that might be something where, huh, you know, now that perhaps the composition of the board has changed, one could look back at how that public comment was treated and say that it was perhaps unjustly ignored and that this should be taken into account. All right, so there's one thought. Another is that there's this question of what's going to happen with water, right? And the impact is pretty clear. If you look at the proposed areas for manure application, the impact is, you know, you have this problem that, okay, in theory, the manure will be knifed in, there will be no problem, et cetera, et cetera. However, in practice, we know that there's a routine kind of overriding if weather creates a situation where you can't knife it in, but you have manure that you need to spread to avoid the overflow. As the ground's frozen, say, it becomes okay, it is acceptable to put that manure on frozen ground. If that happens, it's going to run off, and in this case, if it runs off, it runs off into Nevada, into, you know, I can't remember the name of the park, but it goes right there. We have the map. So that is officially a concern. It's not addressed. It wasn't addressed in the initial master matrix, but it's something that, you know, looking at it more closely might be a real cause for taking a second look at that patient. Also, on that note, I think that it's pretty important to think about the fact that the maps we have for flooding and drainage and things like that are incredibly outdated, and the matrix was scored on the basis of those totally outdated maps. We know that the climate has changed, that weather patterns are very different, and that, therefore, it would make sense, perhaps, to revisit this in light of more accurate information. So there you go.
Thank you.
And again, I would call your attention to this letter.
I didn't receive that. Maybe you two did. I didn't get that letter.
Okay. I think it came to all of us, but that is how I.
I haven't seen it.
Okay.
If I could, may I ask one question?
Yes, absolutely.
John, so appreciate it. I think you and I absolutely do the law, the rule of law differently.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say law is absolute. I think it's about as close to absolute as anything we have. And for a governmental entity, I would strongly that a governmental entity should be completely bound by the law. So, but my question is, so you suggest that based upon the amount of public input that we received in December, that this automatically should have been denied, and I view that, and I just want to ask your opinion of this statement, I view that as a potential reason to deny.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's why you saw a 2-1 vote for us. I sure don't want to speak for Supervisor Olson, but I believe that her vote to deny was at least based on, at some level, on public input that you received. It doesn't say it's the reason to deny. There's multiple reasons that you would vote to approve or deny, and one of those can very reasonably be, from my point of view, the way the master matrix scoring came through, and I believe that's what you saw. So my question is simply, do you think that public input is the be-all, end-all, or do you think there's more factors than that for approval or denial?
I would say it's a contributing factor.
Why reason you
think? Right. Yeah. I think that the real crux is this question of what's going to happen to the water, right? So this question, if we have the real crux, right,
right,
is that you have in the matrix itself, like, a set of things that, you know, do not reflect the actual reality, right? So if the point of the matrix is to create a situation where we know for sure that this CAFO is going to be as safe as possible, then it's not accomplishing its point. It's the data that's being used to evaluate the safety of the CAFO is totally out of date.
Sure, but that sounds more like we're talking about the existing law and whether there's a need to change the existing law. And I actually think you and I wouldn't be that far apart there. I have a question about this idea of as I hear it, and I sure don't want to put words in your mouth, John, but as I hear it, you're really concerned about anything that's put on or incorporated in the soil and the possible runoff. So my question is it your belief or understanding that absolutely nothing, no commercial fertilizer or anything like that, is being put on this ground at this point? And what's the deal there? And seriously, I
assume commercial fertilizer is being put on the ground now. I think that one of the errors that perhaps is being, well, one of the things that I think might be being misrepresented a little bit here in the case that's being made for the benevolence of this switch to pig manure is some kind of equivalency between pig manure and nitrate, right, and like commercial fertilizer. They are not the same. They have different health consequences. I mean, it's not like nitrate runoff is fabulous. I mean, that's obviously bad and it's a huge problem. We have to deal with it. But, you know, pig manure, you've got E. coli, you've got the problem of antibiotics, you've got a whole bunch of other things that come with that are extra problems that make it worse, you know? I mean, what happens when, okay, so their kids practicing, I hear the kids practice soccer in that park, right? What happens when there's runoff in that park and, you know, kids get sick with E. coli? Right? That's different from nitrate in the water, which also is cool, but it's different. So from that perspective, I think that's actually a really meaningful thing. And I think one can say, well, you know, yeah, okay, if you go strictly by the matrix with tunnel vision, all right, they pass. However, if the matrix itself is flawed, you could say, maybe the board of supervisors' decision, you know, maybe it was premature to vote yes on the thing. And we actually need to revisit it in light of better information about what's going to happen with the water.
I have a question. It's a little more philosophical, but still, does a change in board automatically dictate a revisiting of all actions by the previous
board? I assume not. That would probably be a mess.
Okay, so I just...
In this case, however, I do think that you can take into account the exceptional circumstances, right? Because we were at the very edge of one board and the beginning of another. And it was seen to me that that creates, you know, it makes one think that this might have been sort of rushed, with the sense that there might have been an ability to rely on somebody that would not be the case in the next board in terms of the. And I don't know, you know, and that makes sense. That makes sense complicated, right? I mean, we saw this at the national level, didn't we, with the Supreme Court? It makes sense complicated. So, yes.
Absolutely. In January 7th, letter from the Department of Natural Resources was authored by Paul Petiti, who is environmental engineer and senior. Mr. Petiti knew very well what has happened in Destroy County on December 11th. And he still put in this letter that we, Destroy County Board of Supervisors, could contest, and they contest the draft permit by filing a timely demand for hearing before the EPC. So if we could not do that because if we could not file an appeal because our board, the previous board, had recommended, I think Mr. Petiti would have known that and would have caught that. And I see nothing in the law or administrative rules that says, but you can't file an appeal if.
Do you, Linda, do you feel like somebody's saying that we can't file the appeal?
I thought you were.
Are two entirely different things.
Yes, but we can't. The previous question is not prevent from having that ability to file an appeal. This board to file an appeal now. Do you agree with that?
I agree that this board has the ability to vote to file an appeal. What I hope we're trying to get to today is, does it meet the legal merits to file an appeal? Not can.
No.
That's an entirely different conversation.
And I misunderstood what
the comments.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And I guess your question is, should we? But does it, to me, should we and does it meet the legal threshold are two different. Does it meet the legal threshold is a factor, or could be considered a factor in should we? You've acquainted them with one not being the other, but being the same.
Yeah, so I'm absolutely willing. So I believe in December, the Board of Supervisors made a decision based on multiple factors, and each of the three of us weighed those multiple factors as we individually did. I believe we're having the exact same conversation here today, and all I'll point out is we started this with our legal counsel telling us that in his view, we don't have legally sufficient grounds to do this. That's different than we can't do it.
Correct.
Okay.
Chair. Yeah, it seems like we're getting into board deliberation.
Correct, we are.
So maybe we need to, and I'm sorry, my part in that, but I think we need to maybe stop that and then to the department.
I was headed there myself. Thank you. Okay. And next, Jennifer Knox also indicated that she had wanted to address the legal perspective. So I'll call her up next. Okay.
Hi, I'm not a lawyer. I have a question of 134J.
Here in Nevada.
Yes.
Thank you.
My question was, seeing that there was such a public outcry in December, and the two deciding votes. There was a letter to the editor in the Inter-June that the two deciding votes may have taken campaign contributions from the Henrys. So I wonder about the legal basis of those votes and recusing themselves from that vote.
All right. I'd like to point out that I am a dues-paying member of ICCI. There are several people out here who worked for my campaign and donated money to my campaign. Should I also be
Do you stand to make money from a CAFO?
I do not. That would be a question to the supervisor.
So giving money to someone when you stand to make money seems to be...
Oh, you're questioning the appropriateness of the donors, not the appropriateness of the supervisor.
And refusing themselves from the vote. Yes, from that vote.
Okay. I can only give you my response. We probably have a legal response back there also. My response is that, once again, I'm a dues paying member of ICCI, and I receive campaign assistance and money from people in this audience who are pushing for the appeal. I will go back and let you know that while community input was part of my decision, because I value community input, that there were several factors in why I voted to deny. Okay? Would either of you like to respond, and would our legal counsel like to weigh in on the legality?
I'll respond kind of generically and then a little more specifically. If we as a Board of Supervisors are going to go down the road of trying to add up who might have donated to us or supported us at some point in time and what issues might come before us at some point, county government is going to absolutely grind to a halt, and there's going to be many times we're not going to have a quorum to be able to make decisions. As far as this specifically, so if I didn't do this, but if I went through and I added up all the comments that I received, forget about from everybody, because I received a lot of comments from everybody. But if I just looked at the comments from people who had at some level supported the campaign, and if you want to do that in terms of number of people or amount of support, total support, it wasn't even close. I heard from many more people who had been supporters of the campaign that were encouraging me to take a stand against this proposal. What I have done in this case and every other case, again, like it or not, I work really hard to base my decisions on rule of law and the facts in front of me. And what I'm saying to everybody here, and I've said it to many of you who have emailed me, is this one's not even close. What the heck? So I'm a proponent that we need to reopen the master matrix at the state level and take a look at it. 2003 was the last time it was looked at. I think I would differ with many of you of where that needs to go, but I'm in complete support that we need to relook at the law. In fact, I'm head of the policy committee for the state county supervisors that drafted that proposal. But it is our law. Story County, to this point, this may change next week, but to this point, Story County has certified every year since 2003 that we would follow the master matrix, that we will, in essence, follow the state law as it's prescribed. And what I'm telling everybody here is, according to the law, what Longview has proposed is absolutely sufficient. And let's be really clear on this. And this
we're,
is my
getting, we're, getting close to, we're getting close to deliberation. Yeah.
How many more people do we have left to speak?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They appear, if I'm understanding the markings correctly, all to be in favor of an appeal. Am I correct? Is there anybody who turned in a card other than Eric Henry that was against the appeal, a possible appeal? Thank you. And I see our county attorney got up. Do you want to address this any further, or would you like to go on?
Yes. Off the top of my head, I think about that potential allegation. It would seem to be more of a practical concern rather than a legal concern of mine. This time of year, sorry, that last quarter, 2018 with the election, that's when the Iowa Campaign Finance Board, Megan Tucker, gets all kinds of questions. I know I talked to her about several different concerns that were brought to my attention about campaign activity. And I think that's conflating, my opinion would be that it appeared to be a practical issue, but not a legal concern. The appropriate legal concern for a allegation like that would be to raise it about campaign finance.
I'd like to just throw in something as my experience from former life as a working journalist. I had a couple times when people were accused of conflict of interest to say you should do a story on this. And actually with the law that I looked at, it was both in times with A City Council, where the law says a conflict of interest of a sitting elected official is if they are going, they or immediate family members are going to financially benefit from it, from an economic benefit from a vote. Just let you know that that's what the couple, I don't know that it fits in your situation, but that's, I want to tell you, that's just a really short sentence in the Iowa law. So,
again, I would just, those allegations are concerned that should be an outcome.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, so moving on about the number of people, I'm going to ask again, are there people who have specific related to legal, the all right. Okay.
Well, before you cut that off, I just had a two-minute comment as a farmer.
Okay. Yeah, sir. So you filled out one of these cards?
Yes, I did.
Okay. You are?
Joel Reiter.
Okay. All right. There's your card here. It just says Hog Lot. It says Con. So I'll have you come up and you can explain.
Sure. Just give me 2 minutes. I think this might be some valuable information for the public as well as the Hendrick family. Can I go over here?
Yes, please. And once again, please probably want to sit in the other chair. The mic moves a bit, but I'm afraid we'll pull out the wire.
There we go.
No, I don't think
Yes, my name is Joe Reiner. I live here in Ames, Iowa. I own the farmland in Boone County. It's been in the family since 1940. And our farm, like the Henrys, I assume you're doing the same thing. I've got a bioreactor going. I've got covered crops, and I have a buffer strip because modern farming practices were just basically ruining the farm. Okay, I thought about hogs. I really did because I grew up with pigs. We had pigs, we had chickens, we had beef cattle, we had elk.
Operator, once again, I need you to stay up in front of the mic.
Sorry.
We have
okay.
a volume issue with
okay.
the technology.
I like farm animals, and I thought, boy, I'm going to look into this pig business. Because that was kind of fun again. Your pigs are interesting.
Okay. And you're about a minute into your 2 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, but I've run into roadblock. The first one was, what do you do about the dangerous gases that are generated in these things? So being a civil engineer, I said, well, let's make sure we have explosion-proof wiring. Why? My insurance company wouldn't let me do that because they didn't want the conduit there. I wasn't going to build a facility when my little granddaughter is going to be there and get burned and scarred for life. And I think people just need to look about this and about the other problems about the not being able to apply the stuff. What do you do with it? You'd have to build a storage thing. And I'm sorry, but I think you need to be awful careful about if you get into this and sign up for something. You need some real professional help to make sure you properly design it. So I'm talking about professional engineers.
So it sounds like you're giving some advice to the Henrys.
Right.
That probably would be good to go
okay.
and
yeah, I think that's good.
Connect with them later. Okay, thank you. I see a Nevada City Council person here. So are you coming to make a statement for the council?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So Luke Stent, the Nevada City Council.
Before I speak on behalf of the council, I think narrowing the scope of the public forum here to legal only after you close the public forum of the meeting makes it difficult for people that aren't lawyers to know where it's coming from. So in the future, maybe make that.
It was a press release, but now, unfortunately, I understand that, and I apologize for. I understand that. I just apologize that our communication did not put it on our website. Okay? So we will address that in the future. So thank you for that. Okay.
Luke Spence, 732 J Avenue, member of the Nevada City Council, and I'm speaking on behalf of the City Council and the State. I have a very brief statement that I'll hand to you that we voted on and spoke at length about at our meeting last night. Dear Board of Supervisors, on January 14, 2019, Nevada City Council passed a motion to submit this letter of support to the Story County Board of Supervisors for the appeal of the preliminary construction permits issued to Longview Pork LLC to build 3 hog confinement units in Story County. Signed by me and voted on by the council last night. I'll take my council hat off now
okay.
on behalf of myself. Myself and several members of the council were very frustrated that the Henry family did not come to the city beforehand to try to find common solutions and work through this. I think that's probably the cause for this statement here today. If we would have been able to speak about this ahead of time and try to work ahead, I think the city standpoint may be a little different, but today we need to speak on behalf of the city. Try to work
through that. Thank you. Okay, so I have 4 cards left. And once again, I just remind okay, can't hang on just a second. I want to remind people that there is an opportunity on January 22nd for us to discuss master matrix in a broader fashion. Today the topic is centered on filing an appeal, the possibility of filing an appeal, and I could be a little more open, although, you know, since it's been brought up, okay, that our attorney's opinion, at least, is that this would be difficult at best to win an appeal.
the board does have the ability to to make a decision. So the comments of the last four people, if you could try to address it specific to this situation, okay, the Henry 3 application. I'll ask everybody to come up for 2 minutes. Kim, you can raise your hand. I'll go with Kim Stevens. I'll follow up by Gina Folsom. And Gina, if you still want to speak, followed by Brenda Brink, and then Eric. And if you choose not to speak, that's fine too. Okay. Kim, 2 minutes.
Hi, Kim Stevens, 65207 Indian Creek Trail, outside of Nevada. I want to specifically address the water issue. However, I provided Linda, Supervisor Merkin, a map that my husband created. He went and got the drainage district map and overlaid it with the manure application site. It is very clear from that map that the fields where the manure is going to be applied, which I might add, above right up with the city land, will drain both into Harrington Park, where the kids play, as well as into West Indian Creek that runs right through Billy Sunday Field. On that note, I just want to add a little bit of a personal kind of observation. I have 3 boys. East Indian Creek runs through our land. Anytime I bring friends over, I ask them to bring a set of clothes because when kids and water are put together, kids end up in water. Every single time that Billy Sunday Field has flooded, I've seen all of the soccer kids at the end of practice. They're hot, they're tired, they run into the ditch, and they get wet. This is water that's going to contain E. coli and Listeria, cyanobacteria. This is all stuff that's going to make kids sick. And if we have a public health crisis, I'm just wondering, what are we going to do to stop that? And I think that's a very good ground for appeal, that this was not something that was taken into consideration because we simply didn't have that information in December. Thank you.
Thank you. The same reminder.
I'll keep this pretty short. I'm Gina Folsom, 113 South Sycamore, Cambridge. And I have a number of concerns. I guess I'll restrict it to the legal, what I consider the legal. And I agree with what John was saying. I believe that the decision was taken in December to basically ignore the public because there were hundreds of people that showed up for the public comments who were not accommodated, and I think that that's something, you know, that should be considered a legal appeal. Thank you.
And I just like to clarify, I don't know that we had an exact count. I'm not sure there were hundreds here, but there were clearly
people that couldn't get in.
The room holds 75, and so I understand that we, and that it was crowded out in the hall, and certainly we weren't here, we weren't able to monitor the coming and going. But I'm not sure that, given we had some of our staff out there kind of keeping track also, I don't think we topped 100.
A lot of people just left.
What?
A lot of people walked away because, you know, they weren't going to stand outside.
Okay, so they may not have ever been counted. There were a lot of people in the hallways. I know. I
were down the auditor's office. They were down the other back hall. They were in the administrative office. They were down in the lobby. Those people were not counted. And I was
Okay. And so did you want to come up and make that comment into the microphone, or are you fine with just coming on and starting this?
I think everyone heard my voice.
Yeah. Ma'am, we're having technology difficulties. Then your comment will not go on the record.
Go on the record.
That's why I want you on. Okay. Got it. Okay, and please, understand, if you would, please, that we don't always have control over what larger facilities are available or whether there's technology available in them or the timing. There's a lot that
a lot of work behind the scenes that is going to try to create a January 22nd meeting. And so please don't think that we're lying to you in that there are logistic issues. Thank you. Yeah, because I can kind of feel that in your face this way. Okay, thank you. All right. So I can't read your name.
My name is Pam Lord.
Okay, thank you.
And I do wish to address one thing.
You are from?
I live out in the country. I'm in the dead zone. 6,800, 213. I put me right at about 2.5 miles from the coast.
Okay, and then Brenda, we will come back to you. Thank you. All right,
Brenda.
Yeah. All right, so thank you. You would like to address?
I'm going to address the fact that I stood out there for 2 hours. There were people down the hallway. You could not get up or down the hallway. There were people in this hallway. There were people down that way. There were people in the administrative office. There were people down in the lobby. This was very hard. And there was no way that to hear. I was told that the facilities actually did not accommodate that. Many people were.
Okay.
I mean, we were simply not able. You can't hear, you can't be heard, there was no screaming. I think ICPI screened some of us, but sometimes you couldn't get, the resolution that you needed. So there were people, I would say, roughly there were several hundred people all together that were not counted because there were people down the hall, almost to the stairwell at that point.
Yes. Okay.
All right. So that is my point.
Thank you.
Is what I wish to address is that.
Okay.
To the point of... not all the public comments were heard.
Thank you. And thank you for, I had no idea if people were downstairs. And
yes,
it was not conveyed to me that people, more than a few people were coming in. So thank you.
For sure.
Okay. All right. Now we're in the room. Thank you. Thank you.
My name is Brenda Brink, 29514 U.S. Highway 69. Thank you for this opportunity. I am very disturbed by the assertion, the continuing, I would say, discouragement of public comment, because the EPC is there as part of the system, and we want the system to work. We want the system to work. I have been to more EPC meetings than I can count. The Environmental Protection Commission is there for a reason. And to say that there's some kind of legal scare tactic or legal problem that says that we can't appeal this, that's just not my impression. People in here were getting that very, very big impression because you brought up the term legal. Well, I'm not done.
All right, sorry to have interrupted you. You got 2 minutes.
So what I would say is that the Environmental Protection Commission is there for a reason, and it is there for this very situation where people have big concerns. I would just piggyback to say that the people here who are talking about those outdated flood maps, that is probably the main reason we need to appeal. So there is a real reason to appeal. We shouldn't be scared away from appealing, and that's what the system is set up for.
Okay. I do have a question for you, and then others have questions. When you say the system, are you talking about right here, right now? Are you talking about us having this discussion? Are you talking about our attorney coming forward and giving an honest assessment based upon his legal experience? He's our legal counsel. Are you talking about that being the system that's trying to stop you? Or do you say there's something against the system?
No, I'm saying the Environmental Protection Commission is there to hear appeals.
Okay.
And that is a system that's set up. It's been used numerous times. I have been part of those in terms of preserving them, and that system is there for people to use. It's not there. It's it's set up for this very purpose, as the DNR authority has said. It's there for an appeal.
Can you share with me how many times when you've been there that there has been a successful overturn?
I have no reason to answer that question. I have no idea what you're getting at.
Mm-hmm. I'll just leave it alone until we get into deliberation. All right. So I've got left. Looks like Eric, did you want to come up and make a statement?
Nope. I filled out a car for one of those sheets off of Mark Edwards.
Oh, you know what? I wonder if it's on my computer. I did see it earlier, Mark. Sorry. Okay. Come on.
You want to know the way that you would.
Eric Frank, 610 Car Drive and News. I have little to add to what the others have said. They've made the case against this very well. I'm not a lawyer. I can't speak to the legality. I do know this is a very controversial project. It's been well known for quite a while. You may recall there was an election several weeks ago. That's when the voters spoke quite eloquently. And they were defeated by a lame duck session. To call that ethically and morally dubious is putting it mildly. I can say that vote should never have been held. It should have been held off until the new board was seated.
Eric, do you remember several years ago the 86th Council was turning over, and who I can remember was on it as part of the time, Sharon Wood, and I want to say Steve Goodhue, just a couple other names. And there was a contentious issue that came up, and I do not remember whether it was the sidewalk matrix, or the matrix, okay, or if it was the mall on East 13th Street. I really don't remember. But what I remember is that there had been a new council voted in, and something came before the 8th City Council in early December. And the fight was once again, did those council members sitting in power retain their rights until their terms were over on December 31st. I just want to know, do you remember that?
I do not remember that.
The council members who were remaining fought very hard to make sure that their council, the other council members, kept their vote because they legally had a right to a vote until December
31st. Right.
Can I ask something? Yes.
The way I read the law, and I'm not a lawyer, but the way I look at it, once the application had been submitted, the board had to act upon it within a certain amount of time, and that ended up being before January 2nd of this year. The thing that, however, the applicant, is when the applicant submitted. So when the applicant chose to submit, it's related to that.
Yeah, the county has 30 days to do it hard after.
So I appreciate what both of you have said, and I would just underscore that and say, we looked very closely at when did we have to act. And so our choices were either we had to go through the process or it was just going to automatically kick down the DNR without any opportunity for any public input. And let's underscore this as well. There is no requirement, none, for any county to hold a public hearing. There's no requirement for the county to notify everyone who lives within 2 miles outside of city limits. Mm-hmm. Story County has, and I hope will continue, to do both of those things. What we did not have the ability to do is postpone a vote to some later date.
So with the applicant's choice to submit the applications on December or November 7th, that starts the process.
And when was the election?
The auditor's not here.
November 6th. Okay, but I'd like to make it clear. Everybody who sat here on November 11th retained its power legally, okay, at the time. So if you want to address that,
address it so they have their time. Okay, not us. I'm being right. All right, thank you. All right.
There you go. My name is Mark Edwards, 1265 216th Drive, and I live in Boone County. And I just wanted to just take a second here and offer an observation. I was involved with the CAFO that first went in over by Ledger State Park. That was over 30 years ago. And I've worked for the DNR for 30 years. And I worked on the water trail program and outdoor recreation related to water quality. And really, that's still the issue coming up at hand. It's not the particular operator at this point. And so after 30 years of going to so many of these meetings, I can't believe I still do this. This is a big role of my intelligence. But I also understand that the legal part of your job as the government is to protect the common good. And that's where the issue is moving to. So I think we get caught in the legality and specifics of specific people when this is actually not the case at all. The appeal to this is based on the common good and where we're going. And Iowa's water quality is absolutely going to the very bottom in the whole country. Okay? We're competing for the bottom. Now, somewhere this system has to change, and I saw it change back when we fought the CAFO beside Ledger State Park, and that's how we got to establishing a master matrix. Well, here we are today, and we have so many more papers, the water's so much more worse. At some point, your responsibility as the government, and to represent the public, and we're all sitting here, and a lot of people are saying they don't feel represented. Your job is to represent that, not to represent the people CAFO.
May I ask you, is it our job in representing the people to also be good stewards of the county money and to be good stewards of the common welfare, as why we have legal to weigh in, why we have a variety of experts. I'm just asking you, is it also our responsibility to use those resources?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Thank you. All right, thank you. Okay, everyone is open. So now, yes.
I didn't fill out a card, but I kind of came. I think I can answer a couple things that came up on the permit.
Great, super. Okay, come ahead,
uh-huh.
And then please state your name, spell it if you need to,
please
for the record, where you're from.
My name is Brian Ritland. Can you hear me? I'm with the Panther Group, so we're the consultants that prepared the matrix and the permit that I've been calling you for. I just wanted to comment on a couple things that came up, because I know at the start a couple people commented on, like the FEMA floodplains or the county floodplain maps.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have to use the interactive mapping of DNR when these sites are placed, so that is constantly evolving or changing, so feel free to go on there. It's on the web. That's how these are placed. So when you said it's not a current map, it is the current map. Sites are placed on that. The other thing is water quality came up. The phosphorus index is a key component of addressing the water quality. You know, commercial fertilizers are not regulated to the same as what confinements are, and animal manures when you fall under a permit. So the P index and the ranking of distance to water per field, you know, distance to water for site is all addressed in that and in the permit process. So the comments on that were brought up before, you know, are up to date, that is the current rules. That has been done on these sites, and DNR does review that. The other thing is I think it was maybe Linda, correct me if I'm wrong, but you said that Paul Petiti, which is one of the engineers that reviews and approves the plans and permits for, you know, CAFOs, it is a 30-day process for the county and 30 days for the state, or the 6-day permit review. You have to follow those rules. You have to vote according to those the items that come up. One of them is the matrix. The other thing is it's not specific to this site. These permits are kind of a form letter permit on the 14-day notice. Paul Petiti didn't specifically pick these three sites. There's 14 days every county has the right to review on any confinement that we've got a permit on.
I didn't mean to say that
much.
I'm just pointing that out.
You can take that out of the letter. Right. So, I mean, it's not catered to us. It's a bias. They treat everybody the same. And then it was that to have a construction design statement or professional engineering document that's approved and reviewed by the engineers and DNR. So they all are. I mean, they have standards of cement and debris route that go into the buildings. So I just wanted to comment on that, because we do have to take that into account as part of our job with the Pinnacle Group to make sure those things meet and exceed what's required. And as far as the ground, I know there's been comments here on some ground.
Can you speak up a little bit, please?
I can't hear you.
It's a bit difficult to hear you.
Sorry about that. Some of the ground that's in the manure plant, there's more than enough ground for applications for these sites. And I know Longview has said that they'd be willing to maybe take a field out of the permit if that was really the contentious part they have at the ground. So that was just a comment I wanted you to know as a board before you deliberate on it, so that you know that this, or feel we're talking
about. The field would be shaking out. So Longview would be willing to take out a field.
There's a 55-acre field, I think, that's right next to the park. I mean, that they have more than enough ground. They you know, would be more than willing to take
but
that field out of the permit of that.
Sir, I couldn't hear you.
No,
you're talking about the professional engineers and DNR. Would you repeat that again?
So the permits are required to have a CDS or a professional engineer, which is a design, and an engineer is approved.
Yes,
for the
registered in Iowa.
Excuse me?
Registered in Iowa.
Well, the engineers for DNR are the ones that review everything that goes in.
But that's just Paul Petriti. I couldn't find any other engineers.
So the sites have a construction design statement.
Okay.
Well, that's okay. Never mind.
The audio again?
Right.
Yeah. Sherry, are you picking
it up? Throughout.
No, I'm sorry. I know you can't. I just wondered if you're picking it up on the tape.
Yeah, it's just that they can't hear it out there because
the speakers are not apparently working.
We apologize. No, that's what happens. The volume is set at a certain.
And the issue here is we have everyone in the audience talking. We're not picking any of that up. I don't know the public comment.
Yeah, that's
anyway.
I'll give you when they're in their seats.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah, Alyssa, we're still having volume problems.
Thank you.
Okay, and we have IT people in the room trying to do that in a brand new system. Okay, so back there.
The construction design statement is approved by DNR and the public media is an Iowa engineer.
I have a question, Brian, in that is that information available to the people out there? If they were to go on and do their due diligence to look up and see that the latest flood map were in fact used in the application process, that in fact the water, something that's called a Foster thing, yeah, I thought is what I heard, that's available, correct?
Right.
The people online, it's not
the
like I can't see
it. It's all part of that permit, and all the field offices at DNR have them. And the floodplain or the placement map, that's on the west. You just go to DNR's website and see those.
They haven't been updated for quite some time, and I just don't.
I understand different things.
There's an update that is coming up later this month.
They're continually updated. So, yeah, there may be a new one.
No, they aren't.
They're continually updating all of
them. So do you happen to know for the three sites that are under discussion today, are you saying that they have current information that you use to prepare these three permit applications?
Yeah, they all have to be done when we turn the permit in. It's all done. Right off the web at that time.
Right off the web, and so the latest information that was available was right there off of the web. Nobody had any access to something else. I see Margaret James on the net also. She's our environmental health.
Margaret James, the only thing I want to add to that is that the additional water from the Pinto is not included in the one study, and that's a lot of water that's going to come from the one.
Okay, thank you for that. All right. Thank you. I see a hand back up there.
I wonder if I can make a comment to the good of the body.
For 2 minutes, okay, that's what we've been limiting people
to.
And you were here when we talked about trying to get this limited, the legal deal. Okay, please sit down.
try to get as close to the mic as possible and give your
name
and address.
I'm John Malachek. I'm the pastor at the Presbyterian Church across the street.
Push the button. There you go.
I'm John Malachek. I'm the pastor at the Presbyterian Church across the street. I really have no dog in this fight. But I'm making an offer for in the future, we can hold about 300 in our sanctuary and overflow in the basement, and we have 14 microphones. And it's not an object for us across the street, so I will put that out to you for future
deliberation. We believe we get our logistics for the January 22nd meeting by bringing it to Gate Hall. And thank you for the offer, though. Okay? So, I believe, I apologize that it looks like maybe no one has checked the month first to see if it was on, or maybe the gallery
heard it.
It was on. It was on the whole time. So, why did
volume
I hear him
set at a certain volume?
All right, thank you.
Chair, are you ready to
mention? We are.
I move that we appeal the preliminary construction permit that the Idaho Park Natural Resources has issued to Longbrook Folks LLC, Division 10, 28, and 29. I have several reasons I would like to talk about, but I will not include them in my motion. It would be very long. I would appreciate a second at least for purposes of discussion if one of the fellow board members would be willing to do that.
I'll second.
May I go?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
My reasons are as follows. There's two basic reasons. The first one is that Richland 28 and 29 are within 1 mile of residential areas, city of Nevada, as well as exposing residents of Nevada to the urgency of public health dangers caused by CFOs, as proximity will severely restrict development on Nevada in North South. I know that is a concern of people in Nevada. I don't know if that is something the EPC will consider, but I believe that we should make that statement. That we should consider that in terms of our possible legal appeal. The second one is environmental grounds, particularly water quality, and I do believe that that is something that is within the purview of an appeal to the Environmental Protection Commission. First, Richland 10 and 28, my understanding, are in an area drained by County Tile that drains into East Indian Creek. When the DNR on November 27th approved the master manure management plan, and there's an item on there called Existing County Tile Close, question mark. That was marked not applicable. Looks to me that the DNR perhaps did not take into account possible environmental damage due to proximity of drainage district tiles. I would also note that East Indian Creek leads to Hickory Grove Park, where the DNR and the county are going to spend, we imagine, about $5 million by the time it's all rolled up to dredge, restore, and protect this lake. In addition, as part of this project, several landowners close to the park have been required to upgrade their septic systems. The taxpayers' investments and individual investments in this expensive but needed project could, in fact, go to waste if it's polluted by drainage from these chambers. East Indian Creek becomes part of the Indian Creek, which is already listed as an impaired waterway. East and West Indian Creeks are both listed in the county's watershed assessment as highest priority waterways. The manure management plans involve floodplains for both of these creeks. And drainage, as we have heard, drainage from these sites also contributes to regular flooding of Harrington Park in Nevada. According to the city's website, this park provides a shelter with a large grill, restrooms, picnic tables, two softball diamonds, sand, volleyball court, playground equipment, a 9-hole disc, golf course, and skate parks, and plenty of green space. Basin parking. Thus, drainage from these campos could also be very simple. And we have heard that children play in stormwater in Harrington Park. There may also be potential water quality problems at the Richland 29 site, which, like the other two sites, is in the drainage district and close to our own child. So, the fact that the DNR says that existing county tile is close, not applicable. When they approve the manure management plan, plus the role of the Environmental Protection Commission and the potential for these PFOS to cause damage to our already impaired or close to being impaired waterways are the reasons that I feel we should appeal to the Environmental Protection Commission. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, so I think I would just start by commenting on Linda's well thought out statement. And simply, you talked about there are two of the three proposed CAFOs are within 1 mile of the North Texas Nevada. I'm simply going to point out that we got over 45 CAFOs in Story County. We got two of them within a mile of Huxley. We got five of them within a mile of Ames. We've got four of them within a mile of Story City. While I appreciate that argument, it very clearly still meets the state law where the Henrys are proposing putting these. In terms of water quality and specifically in relation to drainage districts, we have 119 drainage districts in Story County. In essence, while this is not 100% true, but in essence, the entire county is covered by a drainage district at some level or another. There's a few spots in the county that that's not true, but there are a few spots in the county that that's not true. And that has not legally not been a requirement. And then my final point is my own. It is simple that this portion of our discussion, this very clear right that the Board of Supervisors has to appeal DNR's decision to the Environmental Protection Council is absolutely a legal process, and we have heard from our legal counsel that they do not find sufficient legal merit to offer that appeal. In my 8 years on the board, there has never been a time that the Board of Supervisors in a legal matter has gone against advice of our legal counsel. This would be a first. That's all for me.
Thank you. The image that I have in my mind on this is of children playing in Harrington Park. I combine that with a personal image of mine. In 1993, I worked for the Des Moines Register out of the newsroom. The flood, if you remember, basically the whole state went underwater. And the news people reported, including myself, when we were trudging around in water, I ended up in the hospital with congestive heart failure and pneumonia for 8 days. So I take very seriously the fact that there are elements that I'm sure I was not just walking around in E. coli water, okay, so I understand that, and that is my number one concern with the situation. My second concern has to do with overall water quality, but I do take to heart what Supervisor Sanders just said, that we do have other confinement operations that have been within a mile of some of our other communities. Regarding the legal issue, this is hard for me as an ex-journalist. I won't lie to you. In addition to my own personal convictions, is I'm used to challenging community and civil counsel for government. All right, and now I am in a position where I'm responsible for the tax dollars of everybody's tax dollars, and I'm responsible to, as much as possible, follow through with the and get advice from the attorneys who are going to be taking the lead in representation. I think, like everybody else, I've done a lot of my own independent research too. The history, apart from my legal counsel, that I gained on my own, not necessarily in an open session, is that if an appeal were even if the appeal were returned, the county loses control. Okay? And it goes to the Attorney General's office in Des Moines to defend the DNR's decision to overturn the permit. So I've seen amongst the people that I belong to an organization with take some sarcastic looks on their faces. Okay? And I want to assure you that every one of the three up here, even if we have different areas we're focusing on, every one of the three of us take this seriously. Nobody is out to get anybody or stifle any speech here. Okay. So with that, I'm going to quit. I'm going to call for the vote, and then we'll see what else happens. Okay? So anything else before? I want to give everybody an opportunity up here to say everything they've said before we take them up.
I'm also concerned about tax code. I'm also concerned about what genius has come from the operation and how much of that is going to end up in the public taxpayers' dollars.
I believe the motion was to appeal Richland 10, Richland 28, and Richland 29. Okay. Merkin?
Yes.
Sanders?
No.
Olson? No. I would not pick up your purpose yet. I would like to offer a motion. I move that we appeal Richland 29, which is the one that has the manure plant that drains into Harrington. Comment? Okay. In that case, I made the motion, so I'll go first, as is typical. Olson, aye. Comment?
No.
Is there any other motions coming up?
I would move that we appeal Richland 28.
It dies for 11 seconds. Any other motions?
I move the appeal Richland 10.
It dies for 11 seconds. Is there any other business that I really believe we have or need?
I want to thank everybody for their time. I encourage you to come on the 22nd to get a call, 7 p.m.
I live in New Albany, Bay, and
Director of Operations, Brenda Dreyer. I work for the Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Commission in Clear
Okay, I'll give a little bit of background on the grant, and then Bruce is going to talk about some of the details of the grant, and Sarah will share, and how it folds into what we started back in November with our workforce conversation that event that was held. Kale is the nonprofit group that is offering this grant, and Kale stands for Council for Adults in Experiential Learning. And they're a nonprofit that serves the United States and into some other international countries, and they're serving adults of all socioeconomic levels by providing research, developing services and tools to expand opportunities for learning, employability, and career success. Brenda Dreyer had seen this grant opportunity shortly after our workforce conversations event, and Kale is offering $60,000 for up to five communities to develop what's called an inclusive development network. The objective is to build capacity of economic development and to design and implement effective and inclusive workforce strategies and share those strategies with the five communities and even broader than that. The grant is 18 months in length, and it commences in March. And the deadline is coming up on January 31st, so we have a little bit of time yet. So I'm going to hand it off to Brenda to talk a little bit about what that application may look like and the things that we would hope to accomplish if the board is so willing to support this endeavor.
So it was really very interesting that we had the opportunity to pull the supervisors and members of our department conversation related about how do we really do a better job of connecting those groups and getting folks that are able to work and getting them to work. And so we had very productive events to be working with the midst of planning next steps for the events when the opportunity that you have seen and structured actually presented itself. So it's unique in the fact that it's really the ongoing funding opportunity. So it's a way to say, well, what about other communities and regions that went through this? In a place, because we've had that initial meeting, we really kind of know some of the stakeholders that are interested in inclusion over the network. And so building this funding opportunity, while things like having a company mentioned would be the applicant, just the one taking the class, but yet really going to require a network of folks to join us and going through the process of understanding what could be new strategies, things that we're not doing today that will have an impact on folks that may need have interest in building our workforce in a bit different way. So, as I see it, and I talked about this, we are the entity that will be trying for the applicants. It does not mean we're making future and strategies are identified that you're finding we need to come to work. We're not about bringing on funding and having some strategy. We want to work across the broad community company to bring the funding and help develop strategies. So, again, 18 months of our group to go through the process and figuring what does make sense and what is successful. We have the opportunity during that 18 months to visit four places that have funding, some best practices, look at what they're doing. They have an opportunity to come here and all of them over that time identify hopefully at least at one such a good good opportunity to build on the good things we had started in November moving forward. You would definitely share it after your comments.
Yes, so we see that November event that we had as really a foundation. That was a first step, a chance to bring people together. We had about 40 to 50 participants, which really showed the interest in the community from both business and social service. And we had a number of individuals and representatives that weren't able to attend the meeting but were very interested in continuing that conversation. So the timing of this grant opportunity really is ideal to help us determine what are the next steps from that initial conversation and what kinds of things can we operationalize in our community to make sure that everyone who wants to go to work is capable of being connected to training and opportunities.
One of the things that I'm sure is on your mind, you just asked the first 10 items, was $150,000. So keep in mind that we're going to need to target a regional initiative. And if you think about some of the things we've already done, the outliers in our mind are Story and Marshall. You think about the things that we've talked about, more of the work of Highway 30, and the connectors we have on Highway 30 are interested to work with Marshall Township post the turning vote to get their folks to work, transportation discussions, working our job there over there. So I feel like we've got some good relationships starting. So there's some, we're not starting from scratch by any means. Look at Micah. They serve some of the transgender folks. I think there are some linkages amongst those counties. And again, as we push through the 18 counties, I think we would have a much stronger opportunity to go from that region. But at least to start, that's how we're tackling the 100,000 in our mind. So with that, I open it up for questions.
Do you have anything else? I have a question. I think you answered one.
Window over there.
Hi. How are you today?
I think we need a little humor. I've
got to be a little humor.
That's right.
Yeah. My question was going to be, what is the bottom line outcome that you're desiring? And I think you answered it almost. That being more inclusive in our efforts to get more people into the workforce.
So,
in order that what?
So, we have a 1.2% unemployment rate. We know the pipeline of job opportunities that we present with 18 months. It really, we know more folks that are continually the underemployed. We have folks that are unemployed. We know there are some disconnects in that there's more to the story than a 1.2% employment. And so this, we do that when we can meet the workforce conversation, and this is now giving us an opportunity to take that to the next level and think what can be done to kind of be both areas of our living the people want that need more resources, want to go. And our employers that need the workforce.
And the second question kind of follows up on that. And also from the really wonderful meeting that you did back in November. The question is, who might you involve in helping write this grant to make sure that you reach all those audiences? And I'm going to give you a part of the answer. Please involve the Center for Creative Justice and Second Judicial District Department of Corrections Services. Because if you are looking, if you're, you've got 1.2%, you're not looking at very many people. But you have to think, where are they probably? Okay? And there's still a lot of prejudice against hiring offenders, so I'm misconceptions about offenders. And we talked about that in November. And that, I think that's huge in terms of really finding people. And then developing soft skills, you know, or whatever the needs are. But please include corrections in that.
It's so wondering, but I'm not very good at knowing all these organizations yet, but I look to Sarah. I can tell you, the Creative Justice folks have been very active participants. I've been so impressed with Greg and Jeff in their interest in this. And so I even think if we look to potential formation of a leadership committee, as Sarah and I were talking about, that particular organization is so unique in other spots. I think that's one of the uniqueness we have is the fact that they have been involved. So appreciate that insight with us. We'll make sure.
And don't overlook the Department of Correctional Services, because if you're looking for the folks who are coming out of prison who also need jobs and getting equipped, the Department of Correctional Services supervises all the work, well, parolees we'll now, because they're going to work for this country. And they also super, and in Marshall County, they're going to work for this country.
Yeah, we appreciate any, if you want to shoot me a contact or
I will do that. Thank you. That's my question.
Yeah, so a couple points is, if we were to go down this road, it's not actually 1.2% of dealing with any more, because if you go outside our MSA and look at Marshall and parts of Boone, the unemployment rate is actually much higher, and so we need to recognize that we would be talking about dealing with more individuals that are not employed. So my question is, what would we be committing ourselves to? It looks to me like we're proposing that the ABC would be the applicant, and that by supporting this, we would be offering that full support, which would probably mean some kind of letter of support. We would also be, I think, implying that our support would include participation, either one or more people fully participating. The question I have is so there will be at least five in-network meetings, one in each of the applicants. So is this a nationwide deal that we'd be committing to sending somebody to those four other meetings around the country?
So I'll answer that. I'm sure that's good. So keep in mind that, yes, you need to send that to an extra company that the county would be called.
Can you guys stop for a second? I'm sorry. That microphone is not recording. It could be that.
Okay. So, so keep in mind that the 60,000 special craft call. So that part of it was just
my mind.
So we don't have free and natural relationship with this. those two parking spaces. So that's a normal person that we communicate with. What can be later before can be like this month.
So I think it's a great question by Linda, and I would just encourage us to think about this, and maybe you already have. But so while I think it's completely appropriate that we would talk in terms of Story County, Boone County, and Marshall County, kind of that Highway 30 corridor, it also appears from reading the document that we could apply based on our labor shed, which in essence includes those and more. And then it doesn't feel quite the same that we're making application on behalf of those two counties without ever mentioning those counties. If we're just talking about the Ames labor shed, well, clearly it includes them, and it looks to me like that's an appropriate way to make the application if we so chose.
That's exactly good advice. Of course, the course of our mind, just because there's a relationship with those two. But that's
yeah, so I just to underscore Linda's point, I would really struggle if I pick up a paper and read that Polk County made an application and they included Story County as part of their application and we had never heard anything about it. I just want us to tread really lightly on that.
So I think that's good advice on the labor shift, that certain actions don't have information on Story.
Remind me what counties have been
included. We know a lot of counties have been included. So, yeah.
And FYI, yeah. Kind of general communication is the same.
Generically, is it 50 or 60 miles? I mean, I know it's not a set line, but it feels like, and not going as deep to the south simply because of the job opportunities to the south, but really to the north, east, and west.
So, quite a ways north. So, down here, go much south of Des Moines.
That's right.
On the lake shed, but doesn't go quite north. Then west. So I think that's great advice. Because that is, we talked about it last, but Story County, the lake shed, and so that's the county.
And I believe just the fact that we're at 1.2% gives us real impetus to be looking beyond our county. I mean, we know Story County is a net importer of employees every day, but it gives us real impetus to look beyond our county borders and really try to develop employees within the entire labor shop.
Is Fort Dodge included?
They're
in
some workforce throughout the Newport.
Yeah, I'm looking at the map and one of the things just sent me, I'm seeing Fort Dodge and Marshalltown.
Well, it's like 560,000
people better. It's something. And there's another, I guess, be double advocate on that. $60,000. Are you really going to be able to serve the whole leadership?
Okay. Now we're out.
Continue back to the discussion about, yeah. I'll add it from a different perspective, or at least the question from a different way, is what are we really expected to commit to? It says evidence of funds or willingness slash ability to secure funds. So as we get into this, what type of secure funds to? If there, you know, obviously there will be areas that have 150,000 or more as a metro area. I mean, this could, Des Moines could be applying even right down the road, right? So what does that really mean the people like Story County or to us about it would, to demonstrate that support. You know, so I really need that thought through. I personally don't want to commit money up front, to say we've already set aside money. And what, of course, is our willingness to secure funds? Ours, personally, not much. But the partners and who would be taking in these partners, and I assume it would be a pretty detailed conversation at the United Way board table with their raising money. You've got your own program. I'm just thinking, where the money, who deflects money, who builds.
I read that bullet point, and I took it differently than you, so I think it's just worth us talking through. It says evidence of funds or willingness, blah, blah, blah. We have evidence of funds. We have a workforce development component that is actually funded. Are we $40,000 a year now that we fund? So we have existing evidence of funds that would, in fact, be leveraged to support what might come out of this. Am I reading that accurately?
Yeah, that's what I
understand. Yeah. And that's kind of the interesting thing. How does that go from here to there to back to the future? Well, we don't know really what strategy might be justified, but I think there's a strong assumption that it's some ideas that feel like we have a bunch to say. This is the best opportunity we're going to be able to
county-owned furniture rather than judicial fashion.
Yep, it's county-owned furniture.
Good clarification. Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion? If not, I'll call the question. Sanders?
Aye.
And in fact, seconded. Olson?
Aye.
Aye.
Bergen? Thank you.
Thank you,
Joey.
Thank
you,
Joey. Good afternoon.
And now let's go to our, okay, discussion and consideration of increasing Nevada internet connection speed from 100 megabytes per second to 1 gigabyte per second for an additional cost of $15,000 a year. I believe Alyssa went to get it far. Maybe we'll, but I need to get Derek started on your report. Yours is going to take a couple of minutes. But
could we possibly, so I assume this is impactful of the county attorney. I know we've got the county attorney here.
Hi.
Here.
Hi.
Jessica Walloway.
Sure. The attorney and Jessica Reynolds coming up. Provide her input on this.
Well, good afternoon to the board. Jessica Reynolds, Story County Attorney for the record. My department is currently experiencing some issues with downloading speeds. What we have happening is we have AIMS police department that just added body cams to their police force, and they're using a technology that's called WatchGuard. Currently, they have 2 body cams that they're actively employing. They're looking to increase that to all police officers in the next 30 days. With just downloading 2 WatchGuard body cams by AIMS police, we are approximately 2 months behind. The speeds are extremely slow in getting that body cam that's now transferred over to us. We're expecting, as I said, more body cams to come online, and we're also expecting the police department to be using WatchGuard body cams here in the next 3 to 6 months. So we're at a pretty imminent point. Right now I have my office manager coming in for office hours, you know, starting the download process. It's still taking us all day to get one of those downloaded. So we're backed up. We're concerned. I discussed a couple of alternatives with our scientists of our IT department. And I'm just looking for increased bandwidth, whether it be through the AMS office or the state office, who can make either one of those work.
County Attorney Reynolds, would this be absorbed for the IT budget?
Yes.
Okay, got it. And do you happen to know, I'm sorry to put you in the position of being the IT expert also now.
So I know IT expert.
Okay.
You should have a packing meal soon.
Thank you.
Find that out. So I know that Barb had some questions to the board that she was going to discuss with you.
Right.
And I just want to give a little background. Does anyone have any questions about the issues that I'm experiencing or that I need to put in?
And you said AIMS or, okay, AIMS or Nevada.
Yes.
And so I see Barb Steinbeck is now here in back in the boardroom. And I'm just wondering, Barb's grabbing some things, and maybe she can think about this answer if I ask it on the way up. So is it a either or, either AIMS or?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Barb.
Sorry, I thought there was a page. Yes, of course.
That's, we never quite know what the timing will be on you. So I think County Attorney Reynolds did a good job of describing her department's difficulties with getting the body camera data to download. Again, it's very slow. So I'm wondering, Dan, Barb, if you'd like to add anything about the pricing, and we clarified it only be one or the other, but anything more about where you're, is there a benefit if we look at doing both buildings, or is that out of a realistic budget range?
Well, we really don't have any skill until it comes to download.
Okay.
And we had budgeted to increase our Nevada speed this year anyway, but the 250 that we had planned to go to will not accommodate these files that now we are having to deal with through a new solution that the city has come up with, and then also the city of Nevada has adopted the same solution. So the videos are going to be bigger and bigger and bigger, and we just don't have a speed for that. So we do have the option for our AIM that would be a gig. And so that cost, whether it's a 3-year or a 5-year option. If we do the 5-year option, it would be $1,250 a month, which is about $15,000 a year. If we do the 3-year option, it would be about $16,800 a year.
Do we, and I'm just looking to see if there's questions for the consumer group. So 5-year contract with the change in technology and how quickly things can change. We know companies can be bought out by other companies because we're seeing the home situation. Is a 5-year contract a good choice for us other than a lower price?
Well, I'll tell you, our experience with Central Iowa Broadband has been very good. Mm-hmm. We did enter into a 5-year contract with them several years ago, and they didn't have to do this, but they came back 2 years later and offered us a tremendous savings. I think they're paying like 30% of what we were paying before, and said it was because they wanted to keep current with competition. So, but I hear what you're saying. Technology changes rapidly all the time. I think when it comes to network speed, and in this area, we're not going to see the huge change that we've seen in other parts of technology. I would be fine with the 3 or the 5-year contract. The 5-year is, in fact, more economical, and I think that I feel confident that if Central Iowa Broadband had found some savings, of course, they would pass them along.
Okay.
Before the contract ended.
All right.
So just a couple of them. Well, first a question. This would apply to every building in Nevada if we go to this, not just the Justice Center, or is this just the Justice Center that we're talking about?
This would be our internet feed that feeds all of our buildings. And to put it in perspective, for example, if the county attorney had a 20-gig file right now, it's taking 40 minutes to an hour to download. With the increased speed, it would take 4 to 5 minutes.
And
it wouldn't time out.
Yeah, and this speed applies, what you said, our problem seems to, for a county attorney specifically, seems to only be downloads. The reality is, I know from our work on videos from the Board of Supervisors, our uploads are taking a long, long time. I would imagine this would also impact things like that.
It would increase the upload speed, but not as significantly as the download, but you'd still see improvement in that. But then also, I just wanted to point out, if you've looked at how your computers are hooked up, the phone jack goes into the wall, and then the computer hooks into the phone. So the phone would be the thing that would not let us have 1 gig capability because our phones aren't capable of 1 gig speed. So we have 2 options there. We would replace the phones that are going to do the download, which I think there's like 3. Julie and I talked about, or what IT has come up with, we could put a little $40 switch between the phone and the wall, and that would give us the 1 gig capability. So really, everybody wouldn't have that capability unless they had improved the phone.
So there would be then the possibility, what you're saying, especially with the adjuster or the splitter or whatever.
Small little switch. Yeah.
Okay, the switch. That there would be the capability to maybe purchase some of additional switches and have those put on, say, for outreach.
Yes,
phone.
Exactly.
All right.
For those who needed it. I know assessors were having trouble a while ago downloading maps from Beacon, and so we tried the 1 gig phones there. We did not see a lot of difference, but that was because we didn't have the 1 gig network.
Further discussion before a motion?
I would move that we go to 1 gig period of 5 years.
Second. Okay. Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Olson? Aye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm sorry I was late.
Next on the agenda then comes to the departmental report, engineer, and quarterly report from Darren Moose. Good morning or afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, sorry, it's afternoon.
Oh, hello. Okay. Sorry.
Right, but we will get used to our new technology, correct?
From here.
Yeah,
yay.
Testing it out.
All right.
Now it's my light texture.
And there, look, the colors appear to be very bright and clear and defined.
True.
Yeah.
Like,
We're back to color graph.
All right, let me start out on the maintenance side of things in our office. We had a cold November, which turned into a warm December, which allowed us to get a lot of extra work done in December we don't normally do. This past weekend, we did have a storm, though. We were doing really good on overtime, so this hit us. We were supposed to get a dust thing. We ended up getting, you know, 3 to 4 inches in Ames, I mean, that's the Blue Earth area. So Saturday, we were out for a 12-hour shift, so that ate up a lot of overtime for us because it just snowed all day, so that means we had to step. Some of the other work we got done in December, this is Isaac Walton Bridge, one of those bridges we designated that probably won't ever get replaced. We're trying to extend the life of it. Had three bad pilings, so we did some concrete repairs to those in December, extend the life of that bridge. This is some damage left from the flooding on S-14 south in the bay. We almost lost some of the pavement, and this has happened multiple times. So we were able to get a pipe under this driveway where it normally didn't have one, because the water's supposed to go this direction, but when it gets tied up, it goes both ways and washes out the road. So we're able to do some grading in December. That helped. And then Marty's no longer here, but I put this in there maybe for him. This is down in Iowa Center. This is a new house that was just built, and he disturbed his entire, I don't know how big a...
Three acres.
He disturbed the entire 3 acres. We had a lot of erosion issues, and the water would jump the road here. This is a public road. It's more of a drive through. It's public maintained, so we maintain it. But these two landlords were not getting along because of this. There were multiple meetings down here. We finally got it resolved, and we found an old pipe that was completely buried. Place that, and hope that's going to resolve that situation. We found more leftovers from the flooding at S-27 south of Nevada. Doesn't look like much in this picture, but this is about a 15 to 20 foot straight up and down drop from erosion. It's hard to see in pictures what it really looks like, but kind of scary when we found it. So we got that fixed, and then fortified with some riprap to prevent that from happening in the future.
After a while, they were putting that riprap on, and it was impressive seeing it live. It's not all that impressive.
No, pictures don't do justice for what this really was. And because it's on a paved federal aid route, it's not FEMA eligible anyway. We caught it late, but it wouldn't have been eligible for funding anyway. We had a lot of debris left from the Riverside Bridge. We had it pulled out immediately because it was covering the entire way, so it was blocking everything that came down. That's the first time that's happened. So we got that out quickly, but then we removed all the debris from what we pulled up just recently. That's all cleaned up. I just wanted to point out this is a Grant Avenue bike path we put in. When we had farm accesses, we thickened it to 8 inches thick. But during construction, we were convinced by the farmer we had to widen this one access a little bit because of a power pole issue. And so this section was not thick, and that's 5 inches thick compared to 18. You can see what happens immediately when farm equipment goes over 5 inches thick. So we actually got that section replaced in December. We poured concrete in December. So
that's not the low area along that trail. That's
it actually is back here. We're going over top, you see the cornerstone, so it's down in that area. There's a very large power pole
right
next to it.
Yeah.
Did some shop improvements, put the new siding on, made them much more energy efficient. That's the Collins shed. This is up in McCallsburg. This one, we didn't do the front face yet because we have some issues with this post here is rotten on the bottom. We need to do some repairs to that. It's kind of shoving out in the top here. But you see how bad the condition of the structure was before, but that's what it looks like now on three sides. And we just painted this for now so we can get the structure repairs done, and we'll probably go in and get the siding on the front. While I'm talking about the McCallsburg shed, we've heard some rumors that possibly there's a building just north of this that may come up for sale. I think it might be fairly inexpensive building that we can purchase instead of build a new building in the future. So we're keeping an eye on that in case that pops up. Just going back, all of our work orders from 2018 calendar year, I think there's just over 600 work orders that were completed. To give you an idea, everything we get into is our department. and everything's recorded now in our new work order system. This is the amount of work orders that are left open right now. It's about 90 of them, and these are high priority work orders. A lot of ditch cleaning, with the greens, and tile issues that aren't high priority. So still open work orders. Moving on to our gravel and rock hauling. Yellow is what our county forces hauled in gravel. So we have two gravel stockpiles, one in Marshall County that is now completely used up. We don't expect to use that anymore. And there's one in Boone County, right about in this location where we haul gravel. I'll show you a picture of that one. The blue lines are what county hauled rock with our forces. And then we have a contract haul that covered this area from our area. So this is limestone. This is the first time this part of the county has ever seen the white rock. We call it limestone. They usually only see this gravel. So a lot of happy people to finally see some limestone. It creates a better base for our roads and holds up a lot better. Our crews haul much more rock than this. You don't see on this because of the FEMA map. We had to haul rock to almost all these locations. These are all locations that the water went over the roadway. These are just spot rock locations that don't show up on the... These are where we covered the entire mile of rock. This picture of the Boone County gravel pit just gives you an idea of the size we're talking about. This is our large dump truck and loader. This is our pile. It's about 20,000 tons we had. We were able to haul about 10,000 of that in December because the weather held up. We have about 10,000 left there. This is probably Boone County's pile here. It's probably 80,000 to 100,000 tons sitting there. Once we use this material, we're probably not going to come back to this pit anymore. We're probably going to rely on limestone. It's a better product. And the quality seems to be dropping here a little bit.
Anybody who's interested, there's a bald eagle's nest out there.
Oh, really?
If you're out there running around, it's kind of entertaining to watch.
Nice. Moving on to construction projects. My last report in October, we only had one project completed, but as usual, most of our county stuff, they put off to last in the year, but we did get everything completed, thankfully. The last one was the Sand Hill Trail Bridge that almost pushed into December. We did three bridges up here in Lincoln Township, one bridge down here by Collins. This is the shared with Jasper County. They constructed it, we were paying half of. The Sand Hill Trail Bridge, we paved University, and then North Dakota Overlay, or not North Dakota, I'm sorry, West 190th Overlay. Picture of the West 190th. We did this culvert project about a year ago, and we knew there's a deep fill we had here, so we knew it was going to settle in 1 year, and it did, so we had a bump here. That's why we scheduled it for the overlay a year after, so we got rid of that bump. A few pictures of our bridge replacements with box culverts. The finished product is that one up north. This is in Lincoln Township. Finished product. You can barely see the culvert here, but that's what the farmers like. No obstructions when they take the light equipment through there. This is down in Collins. Finished product there. And then Sand Hill Trail Bridge, this is the one that concerned me the most. Structurally, this one about its last leg. We got it replaced just in time. You can see how narrow it was because it had a steep drop off over here. So the bridge, I think at some point it was shoved this way. Got it finished November 30th, I believe. That's the finished product. Kind of see the green. Joe had hydro-seeded over here, and thanks Cindy for supplying some wildflower seed for us to match the area. We have some prairie over here. You can donate some seed for that. So thank you, Cindy. And this is the Jasper County Shared Bridge. This is also late done. These are ice chunks you can see here. That's why this dog was barricaded up to warn traffic for that. Moving on to construction project design. We have two projects in January, DOT letting. 290th Bridge, that's this one right here, small wood bridge, and C63 overlay. Those will be let tomorrow, actually. This will be the first time we'll have to sign those electronically, so I'll get to that in a second, of course. One project is in the February DOT letting, 300th Street Bridge. That is right here. Then we have four more bridge replacements. We have scheduled for a February 12th letting, and you approve those final plans today on the board agenda. So if I just request if you could please sign all those the day before you leave, like you get those out for advertising then tomorrow if possible. And those are the other four yellow dots you see here, those locally left ones. Wanted to touch quickly on the Huxley paving agreement. That's this green line here. I don't think I have a close line for that. No. I'll probably put it on next week's consent agenda. Ethan's finished looking at it, county attorney's office. The board's put this in the five-year program, and before Huxley will move forward with hiring a consultant, they want assurance the board is going to pay for half of the project. I'm pretty well committed to that already, so and it must be the project. So
pretty well committed, but not formally committed.
Not formally. This would formally commit you to paying for half of the project.
So do we need to actually have that board discussion before you put anything on the consent agenda?
Well, it's in my constant year construction in our local budget. It's in that you haven't formally approved that yet, but it's in the five-year program.
From last year.
From last year. I can bring it for a formal discussion.
So, I think it's fine on the consent agenda, and if somebody wants to pull it, we can pull it. I just wanted to make note that there was still one more, even though within our five-year plan, we had not directly committed to funding half that. The other part of this I want to add, and I don't think today is the right time for us to have this conversation, but this stretch of road could be impacted by a conversation that I understand we're going to have in the coming weeks about the possibility of doing 560th University and the extension of 13th Street in one fell swoop. That would impact how we're funding this.
I'd like to see it just as an agenda item because I'm going to pull it anyway. So might as well put this in the right category, at least so that we bring all three supervisors up to date on it and look forward, especially now with what we'll be discussing from financing on down the way. And how long can you hold on this before we have that conversation about ways to finance road projects moving forward?
They would like to get this left about a year from now, so that means to get a consultant hired. They haven't given me an official approval on it either. They want to see this from the board first. I could probably hold off a little bit because, like you said, our budget meeting in 2 weeks, that's when we'll cover. We have $750,000 budget local construction for this.
So we can hold off the February or?
I don't think that would have led too much.
Okay. Because January 29th is the other, right after. We finished basically budget discussions. We've got one call back already on the 28th. So even one of those 2 days.
But this was also impacted more by the bonding discussion.
I understand that.
Right.
Yeah. So how about February 5th?
Yeah, I can understand you make a little comfortable doing that ahead of those discussions. So, yeah.
All right. Thank you. Tell Don Alderman he can call me if he wants to yell at somebody.
This is the discussion, Laura, so I'm signing electronically. This is Doc Express. We use this program already, but the new part is the electronic signatures. Did you get the email?
I saw your email, but I haven't read it yet. So I will call you this afternoon if I have any questions about how to get my signatures in there.
So it's kind of a two-step. One, get to the Doc Express account. Once they do that, they have to come back and get you an actual digital signature account through the DOT. And then once you have that, the important thing is to make sure you use the computer that you're going to do this on. Because DOT says, I think it's more the digital signature part. You have to use the same computer. It only allows one computer.
Got it.
Use your work computer.
Yeah, right. So, I guess so. All right.
And you'll have to use that for conservation. You've got a couple of DOT lines come up as well, so you have to use that for their account as well.
All right. I anticipate probably I'll contact you if I have problems about your. Okay. Thank you.
It hasn't been real smooth so far, so I
expect to. Cheery.
Work through it with you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
The five-year construction program workshop, we hold that once a year. We have to submit our five-year program to the DOT by April 15th each year. And it seems like each year we try to move our discussion of this up a little bit further. We used to have it in March, but it kind of gets in the same time frame as the local budget discussion, but that's good because
get involved a lot in discussions. So we moved it up. The earliest I can probably do it this year would be February 12th, so that's what I'm proposing. And we do that now as a workshop after the board meeting. We did it as part of the board meeting. I got kind of a long discussion before the board meeting. So if anybody has any issues with that date, let me know. And if I don't hear anything, apparently soon I'll have them start looking at putting out a notice for the workshop.
Okay, thank you.
Discussed this with you a couple weeks ago, the bridge bundling grant. We have a proposal. I was hoping to hear back by now. We got funded for that, but we haven't. That's the bridge there. It's right here on E18. If this gets funded, we had about $500,000 planned for that. If that gets funded, we'll put that towards this bridge over here, Skunk River Bridge. It's about $1 million bridge. So we'll free up some funding for that. 280th Street, Skunk River Bridge closure. This heads back to the Ames Water Treatment Plant. We had to close this bridge a little bit over a year ago because, well, we assume a heavy load damaged one of the abutments. At that point, we didn't know a repair would be an option, but so we started working with the city on an agreement. So these farms that have land on this side of the bridge could use the private Ames-owned road to get access. We didn't get anywhere with that agreement. Ames was probably at it for a little bit as much as I thought we could agree to as far as dust control, bringing that run up to current standards and stuff.
So is it typical that you just make that call rather than, I mean, because it sounds like they had an offer on the table and you don't typically bring that to the Board of Supervisors?
Well, the point when this started, the bridge repair wasn't an option, so we thought this would be our only hope was to get that.
Right.
Since then, we found a way to get the bridge repaired and actually back open, so the agreement isn't that important. So that's kind of why it's on the wayside, otherwise it wouldn't keep back here for sure.
So I just want to point out so that this is not just going to Darren. Darren handled all this with our county attorney's office, and that's who's been involved in those conversations.
Sure. So my thought is, I think you did a wonderful job of figuring out a rather affordable way to fix the bridge, right? But we know that there is a possibility that if another person takes a large, large load over that bridge, we're back to needing to figure out how to fix it permanently or get this, the agreement permanently. So is it completely closed down, or is it just that you feel you and Ethan can go back if we need to reopen the session?
It's definitely not closed, but I think Ethan felt he was to the point where there was probably no more negotiation that was going to happen on their end, what they're asking for.
But then,
so what changed is we actually got the control. Like, that's the main thing I wanted to inform you of. We had one little repair left. We got that done, so there's no reason to keep closing further. So the bridge is open, so there's legal access to the landowners. So this discussion can't continue. That's
got it. So at that point, you and Ethan can bring it to us and say this is the best they're going to go.
This is a temporary, limited solution that we better be fully discussing and figuring out what our options going forward are. Because I can't underscore enough, this is temporary and limited.
Yeah, because it's weight posted now, right? Low posted.
Yes, and it's dropped down to 8 tons, posted 8 tons. And that's
but
kind of due to the repair, that's all we can get out of the repair.
It was low posted before, not at 8 tons, but it was low posted before, and that didn't stop.
Somebody did it, which is why I'm kind of asking.
Yeah,
you know, we were.
Right,
yeah,
absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Another bridge issue I just want to make you aware of. This is where this is, down by Maxwell. About this location right here, a driveway bridge. We have, I think, 3 of these left in the county. The county road is here. This is actually a driveway to get into a field, but that is in the county road right away, so we take responsibility for those bridges. You can see the sign there, that's a load posting. It's close to 12 tons, and that's his only access. So it's difficult to get those crops out of that field at only 12 tons. So we looked at this a number of years ago, but the landowners back and wants us to really look at harder on a permanent solution here. So wanted to bring you at least aware of the situation right now. There's at least 4 bad piling and a
at least four stringers are cracked to the heavy loads that are going across it. The issue here is where it's located. That's the bridge. You can barely see it right there. It's bounded by this larger stream and then the Heart of Iowa bike trail. This is the property owner that's requesting something. This person here and this one, they're two separate landowners. They both take access off of the Heart of Iowa trail. I met with Mike last week to see if they were having any real issues. They can get off fairly flat and it's usable. It's not ideal for them, but it's working okay. When you get down to this property, it drops off. Like I say, in photos, that you can't tell, but it's a 20 to 30 foot drop off the bike path down to this land. So there's no way you can make that hill to get on the bike path. So that's why the bridge is a lot more important to him. The more I'm looking at this, I'm going to look real hard in the next couple weeks at repair options. It would be almost a complete rebuild. We can't drive piling internally, but we can maybe do a concrete wall over the top of the piling. If I can do this for, you know, $5,000 to $10,000, that's a much better option. I'm looking really hard at that. And if not, one option would be maybe to go actually move the structure this direction. There's a large crossroad culvert right on the property line, unfortunately, so you have to move it a little bit further and get an easement over to them. If we got into a replacement situation, we'd probably move the structure to allow them to get off the bike path as well.
And so we would need an easement both to the property on the east and one all the way on the south as well. If we were to do
this one, they're going to be landlocked either way, so they're probably going to still have to take access off the bike path.
Okay.
I will get back to him and tell him I'm looking at both of those options. I wasn't. This is the reason so I didn't get anything in the budget proposal over which starts for next year, so I'll tell him that it's at least 2 years out was a replacement. We're going to look at repair first.
Well, but if it's 10 to 15, you can figure out a way to absorb that in your budget. What would a culvert, if you were to put in a new culvert for access to both those landowners, what would that cost us?
You know, roughly $50,000 to $60,000.
Okay.
Moving on to 535th Heart of Iowa trail request. Mike Cox has got a grant to pave the Heart of Iowa trail up to this point. This is where we run into landowner issues. That old railroad bed got turned back over to private property, so Story County does not own the bike path through here. And so, again, here's that gap. He's going to pave up to here. He's not able to get through here. I believe Rick, you involved trying to work with landowner. This was an option, or possibly buying easement on either side to put the bike path and then kind of edit that in. So really the only option we have left is to actually pave the gravel road up to this point, which is the paving. We actually have some paved shoulders on here that act as the bike path over into Huxley. I put that in my proposed local budget, $225,000. Just think about that a little bit before we get to that point, but that's what that funding is for. There could be some possible grant funds Mike could apply towards this after the fact, but that's unsure at this point.
So that becomes a very expensive quarter mile. I'm just pointing that out. Would it have been less expensive had you been able to work it out?
Sure, if you're not paving a road, you're paving a bypass, which we know. Oh, I don't know that we know this, but generally our bike paths are about a third of the cost of the road.
So roughly $100,000. I think you're $400,000.
Yeah, I had real hopes that we were going to be able to work something out, and it just ended up becoming a flat number.
Okay.
This is one place, Mike's been working on this for years.
Yeah, how many acres was it?
No, I mean, we were talking about using as much of our right of way as we could and probably still, so it was the west property that ran along the road, and we were talking about probably taking, I don't know, 10 or 15 feet for the, you know, if you're not talking about that much money. There was no interest at all in selling this property. None, never was. There was the possibility of granting us an easement to do it, and it just went away. And so the options that we face now are go ahead and get, so we're paving the rest of the way over to Slater. So now we can go ahead and have full pavement all the way into Huxley, or you can have this stretch of gravel, which is problematic depending on what kind of bicycle or mode of transportation you're using, some of which are not really usable on gravel for any stretch.
Does the landowner live in that farmstead right up there in the northwest?
A family member still lives in that.
Which way is there a driveway coming up?
It comes up the pavement. Yeah.
Oh, it's already paved.
Yeah.
Okay, that's an
issue. This was
Thanks
one
for your
that,
efforts.
And so this was one that back in the day, so every county was offered the railroad right away when it was originally abandoned, and you know, what kind of, it's hard to have that kind of foresight back then, but this is one of those areas that it would have been easy if the county had said yes back in the day. We would have controlled all this. Now we don't, and we're not going to in our career.
Moving on to 720th Avenue Railroad Crossing, this Lincoln Highway and New 30 down here. Polo, we have the 4 miles over to Marshall County line. We only have two crossroads here. This is the location I'm talking about right here. This is a decent gravel road here. This is a double beam road for us. Met with the DOT and the railroad out there about a month ago. It's hard to see in the picture, but it's a really big hump over that bridge that can get longer semis can get caught up on that. So DOT has some safety concerns. Looking the other direction, you can see the crossing back here, and then that corner coming out has got a lot of these soft areas. The DOT, they're kind of backing us in the corner here. They either say we vacate this crossing completely, or they're going to require us to do a $300,000 crossing improvement. So I told them I'd bring it to the board. The issue is going to be this property owner right here. I believe right now they use that direction to get access to Lincoln Way instead of going down here in 30. There's so many bad locations along this Lovely Road, and that's their only way out. So if we abandon that crossing, they will be forced to take this direction. This is all Story County and DNR ground on this side. They have an issue with, you can kind of see it right here. Spots get so bad, traffic goes around the wet spots onto the DNR ground. They wanted us to control that. I told them they put up a fence and stop it, but I can't stop traffic from going out around. We tried to improve the drainage with the motor grader grading, but it's so wet in this area, and with that traffic through there, we can tear it apart for the year. So, what I plan to do is set up a hearing and discuss the permanent closure of this, and then notice the landowners. I would expect this person to object. The other thing involved with this is when you do abandon a railroad crossing, there is some negotiating the board can do as far as damages. I think the DOT said you typically get $15,000 to $30,000 from the railroad. Get rid of crossing. So there's some funding we could get out of it. But I kind of think, kind of back in the corner, we have to do something. Leaving it as is isn't an option from the DOT, they said.
And DOT has the authority to require improvements to a crossing like that?
That's a legal question. They felt they did.
So I'd like us to have an answer to that as well, especially for that landowner and saying, hey, the reason we're doing this is we're not willing to spend the $300,000 for one property owner to use a crossing.
And I need to double check into that. The $300,000 might not be all county liability. That might be some grant funding. Okay. Railroad funds that would cover a lot of that, but still $300,000 if you want to spend public funds on something like that. But I'll check into that and but I think we probably just need to hold the hearing to see how the landowners feel about it so we have a direction.
Yeah, so the other question that I would have if we're going to have this conversation is, so if we get rid of the crossing, I recognize that we need to have full access all the way to Lincoln Highway. If we don't, if we do have the crossing, can't we abandon the stretch right there just north of Lincoln Highway where we're having all the water problems depending on where that southern landowner has taken their access, it just happens a stub coming off old Lincoln Highway instead of New 30.
Well, the crossing would be right here. That would be closed.
You know, I'm saying if it stayed open. Right. If the crossing stayed open. But what I heard you tell me is the southern portion of that Level B road is where it's really bad. We've got people coming out on the DNR ground. Could we abandon the southern portion of that Level B road and just have no access to Highway 30 and just have access to Lincoln Highway if we kept the railroad crossing?
With improvements to the railroad crossing?
If we were able to keep the railroad crossing, however, what I'm hearing you say is there's one landowner that is appropriately using that crossing.
So you're okay with me setting up here?
Yes.
Because the landowner that is.
Okay.
Okay. Bridge inspections are underway. We do bridge inspections every other year. So every 2 years, this is our posting map. That's one of the main things that comes out of the bridge inspection. The ones that have numbers by them are low posted. That report doesn't come out in time for me for this 5-year program session, but it helps me in planning for the next one on what bridges to replace in the future.
Is this the one that the inspector comes out, the police inspector comes out also, or is this one you do insurance?
We hire WCS out of the consultant to do them for us.
And these are where sometimes those surprise. Yes,
so far I know they've got the north half of the county done. We've only been notified that this bridge needs to be lowered and posting. Typically our southern half is the one we have more issues on when it comes to bridge inspection. So I expect a few more, but yeah, this is where we get notified you need to do something immediately. So we expect that a couple anyway every year. DOT project update. The flyover bridge, just quickly, that's what it will look like eventually.
That is not a county project.
That's what I want to say about this one. My notes here, what will get pushed in the spring. We just had a meeting last week, and DRT says they're not spending anything in 2019.
So
we're going to at least summer, and possibly in the fall, maybe further. We don't know. They just don't want to push anything. The other project I wanted to touch on is the 580th interchange. Did get some preliminary plans to look over. They're not really public at this point. I just wanted to tell you I have those. You can look at them if you want. This pretty much follows this layout. It gets into at least one house right here. They're not exactly sure which one it is, where the local connection comes through, north of Recky Feed Store. I believe this house right here also gets purchased. There will be some local connectors. The ones that are labeled local connectors will become county maintained in the future. The good part is this connects just north of Fetters over here. We currently have this bridge in the program for replacement because we didn't know about this connector at the time. We need to get that replaced before the DOT closed access to 30. Because of this connector, we can probably drop that out of the program. That bridge has some life left in it, so we'll probably drop that out of the program. The connector will give another access off the bridge. I guess my only other concern, Cindy, you're here, and I do have concern that all the housing over here, there will be a local connector here, but I would imagine some of this may take this gravel road down here to get up to the interchange, so you might see more traffic, unfortunately, coming through your area. But right now, this is the latest. It's out in 2022 in the DOT's program. They got some money in for grading and bridge and grading, and then $7 million for paving in 2023. So we're 4 to 5 years out, but it's currently in the program. Nothing to the east for interchanges in the DOT program at this point.
Can you go back to that last slide? So this whole interchange would lead me to believe that we're going to see traffic from the churches trying to come out north rather than coming all the way over to the east and then back. That's problematic that we need to be addressing. Clearly, it makes it really tough closure of any access points to the east of 580, but that's a topic of discussion for future projects with the DOT. But 580, 590 would remain open at access at crossing there on 30, according to this one.
That was the last correspondence we had, because this map does show close here, and I think those are just drive accesses, and then this, they have closed on here, but we contacted them about that, and they said no, that
right. That's what was agreed to. So I would just ask Chairperson Olson, this is something that we need to get in front of us sooner rather than later to gauge the feelings of this board and make sure it's clear to DOT how we feel about this section of Highway 30 between Nevada and the 580th interchange. The old board was pretty clear about what they felt, but we need to have that conversation again.
Thank you.
Motor grader lease renewal, we've been working on documents for that. You approved the CAT part of it. We're working on the financing part. The delay there is CAT has 6 of the machines in stock currently. The other 4, they cannot commit to actual dates for delivery. So until we get that, we can't find the financing part. They've only locked the rates in until March 22nd. And if this goes past, that will have to renew the rates. So we're waiting on that. But we do save around $150,000 by going this U.S. Bank financing option, so it's well worth it. But that's the delay at this point. We've got the documents ready to go as soon as we get that date cat solidified.
Thank you. Unusual, the Sheriff's Department was having trouble getting all of the explorers delivered too. So maybe down the road we'll figure out why this is happening. Is it a slowdown somewhere else in manufacturing?
Well, I think it's just a good economy. Yeah, I think we're seeing a lot of people make a purchase directly.
Okay, thank you.
And last thing, the motivators, we're working on installing the diesel, the DEF, so that we call it, an extra tank that goes on these for the exhaust burnout. So we have to install these tanks in our sheds. We're working on that currently, so we're ready to go when they get delivered.
This is an extra step and an extra cost, and is extra wear and tear. Are we seeing that it has the intended benefit for the exhaust?
That I have no way to verify, but it essentially burns it really hot and burns out all the volatiles, and it should end up in a much cleaner repair program, but I have no way to verify that. But with our trucks, it causes a lot of heartburn cost for that extra unit. The motor graders, they started about 5 years when we got the lease, so we're happy to get the motor graders without it for a while until we got the system figured out, so we're hopefully going to get the bugs out before we get them. The trucks are starting to get the bugs out now. The first 5 years were struggling. A couple drainage district issues. Linda, mainly for your benefit, I want to explain, we typically don't have regular drainage district meetings, so when I come to do a report, I try to give you some of the hot topics, and if it turns into something we need to get public input on, and it becomes a drainage district meeting. So some of those now would be DD20. We have already hired our watchman service essentially now to do the railroad crossing design to get a new tile put under the railroad crossing under South Fernald. That is in the works. The other issue in Fernald is that tree and the tile root issue. We did have a recent development on that. That is the tree there. It's a very large tree. This property owner just changed hands. So we've preliminary comments from the new owner that they would not mind seeing that tree gone. So we're going to get some costs. It's a difficult tree to remove because there's power lines right next to it in the house at the post. But I think it would be a lot less costly than if we're going to put a solid tile right here. The utilities underground are a mess, so it would be costly that as well. But I would think maybe $1,000 or $2,000 we'd get rid of the tree rather than we're looking at $5,000 to $8,000 to put the tile in. So to figure out that issue, then Mr. Hunter here would probably do this with our own crews. He wants to see a tile put in here, connect to the drainage district tile, which is the green line, to drain this wet area that his list for a long time.
And if we do that, then if we abandon all of that back to him once we get the work done?
I would, especially if we put the solid tile in, because he's concerned about these tree roots and then he'd be responsible for maintenance of it. But if we put a solid tile in, there shouldn't be any maintenance on that tile, and then we have no
reason to have this a public road that dead ends right here.
Right.
We have no reason to have that as a public road anymore, so I would recommend vacating it.
So there's times that you see his fuel tank right there at the north end of this property. There's times that that fuel tank floats out there, and that water has nowhere to go.
He's talking about vacating the
road
fuel tank
line. This road right here? Yeah. Public road stops here, that's all private line back here.
Right.
So where's the fuel tank?
That way.
That's right. So you're talking about abandoning that road so you have some tank.
We just leave that there.
Yeah. No, he would own half of that. He would still have access to get back in there on that hill. So they would revert to the landowner.
Okay, right. So it would end up being one lane room. Drive for him.
Yeah, they would just own the property between him and the neighbor if we were to do it. The problem is us putting the tile in before we abandon all of it, if we're going to put the tile in. This is where we've been moving. Our problem right now is, okay, so we could put the tile in, but we've got capacity problems to the south where Darren was showing us that big tree. So you saw one, and then you talk about salt. It is, Darren, is what we've talked about in the past.
This is an issue that came up a little over a year ago. This is down south. This is S-14 over here, almost down to about 3 miles north of the Polk County line. It's one of our smaller tile districts, but it's got a really deep portion through here, 12 to 15 foot deep. And you kind of see some dark spots. That opened up a year or two ago. You can see the path we had to use to get back there to fix the hole. We spent about $5,000 to open cut it, and they put in a new intake, and it's reappeared just recently. A large hole. We get tiled that deep, it creates a large hole and it sucks all the dirt in. So we're trying to get estimates again from Jensen Contracting. It's going to take two excavators, track excavators, get back there to dig way down. It's really sandy soil too, so it tends to fill the hole back in. So we have to dig a really big hole just to get down and see what's wrong with the tile. Sometimes we're spending that kind of money. We're talking about sending that bill to just a couple landowners.
Right.
Sometimes that can get contentious. We're charged with maintaining the tile regardless of the original conditions. We have to do this. If it gets much over $5,000, I'll probably bring it to the board and maybe have a discussion of this.
So our automatic trigger point is $50,000?
To take bids.
To take bids?
Yeah. That was raised up quite a bit. It used to be $5,000 we bring anything, $5,000 to the trustees, but legally it's up to $50,000.
But you can try to bring it to us anytime there's going to be a substantial impact to any landowner, you try to bring it to us as trustees.
They were billed a little over a year ago for the $5,000, they didn't hear much about it.
So.
The other district issue, the thing with districts is there's always something new every year. This is a new issue.
Thank you.
Slater, this is a district. Slater recently annexed all this land here, which took in a lot of the district through here. The rest falls into Boone County, and this district is controlled by Boone County. We just have a little bit of Story County left in the district. What's going on is Slater's got a development plan right here, real close to the tile. We've been working with them for a number of months now, reviewing their plans. That was the original plan that came out. They set one detention pond here. This is the district tile right here. The latest, they've got another detention pond here and still a detention pond here. The yellow is the district tile. Boone County engineer and myself been reviewing it. We decided it was probably enough concern to turn it over and get Kent Brody's opinion. We've done that already. He had a number of concerns as well. Lots like this with coming right. Really, you can't build a house over the district tile.
Unless you're in Gilbert.
Yeah. So we have a number of requests for Slater at this point. One, they need to show the tile easements on the plat. So everybody's aware and they know they can't build over the tile. There's concern about this is the profile of the detention basin and the district tile is here. We don't know how that connection's really made. We don't want to have a pond put the tile under pressure all the time. We need more details on how they plan on draining that into the district tile.
But the development has said the only way for the development to be feasible is to drain everything through the district tile outlet. And Ken's kind of put the numbers that we can relate back to the city on what type of drainage that tile allows, and it's nowhere near what a residential development would expect. So he's filed saying they shouldn't be using it, but they are in the district area, so they have a right to use it. But at what point does the county authority override it? City authorities were getting into that situation.
Does this happen to be a local developer?
I do not know the developer. At this point, we're working
pretty
with
the development
name, yes. Okay. We're working with consultant Snyder at this point.
That's who I thought
this person was. Oh, there's also my other thing to point out is this is a gravel road over here right now. We're talking 40-some lots. We do not have an updated 2080 with the city of Slater. We have been maintaining this for them, even though they own both sides. If they dump 400 vehicles a day onto that gravel road, I think I'll probably tell me if I got one of the maintenance.
Okay.
Informal agreement. They need to take that into account when they approve this road or subdivision. But back to the district discussion, Scott, good county engineer, he's talking to his board about it as well and what the next steps. We need formal trustee action to approve this, or we've never really done this before. So, we don't know.
So I would suggest that if we go with a development that's planning on using an existing district tile for its primary means of drainage, that it's completely appropriate for the trustees to weigh in. Second thing I would ask is what percentage, this is a smaller district as I recall, what percentage of it is wholly within city limits?
I don't think it's quite enough.
It's got to be 75% for us to be able to consider just turning it over to the city and it becomes the city's problem. We did that in a couple of cases a few years ago. And just so we have all our information, I'd like to know what percentage is inside the city limits and what percentage is outside. It added complexity because I think this was spilled all the way over to Shelball. Does it go that far south or not?
It outlets just south of T10.
Okay, so maybe that makes it to Shelball. But anyway, how much of the land area of the drainage district is within Slater and how much is outside?
Let's take that. And lastly, I do want to note, I will start putting all these presentations in a PDF format. I use a lot of photos, so I have a very large file size, so I can't email them to you. So they'll be on the desk drive under our engineer's folder as a PDF, and they can use it as well for reuse. And lastly, we have one new hire, Ryan Smith, Equipment Operator 1. He's been a prior summer help for a couple of years, so we knew what we were getting with Ryan.
Great.
So glad to have him on board.
Not for me.
Yeah, you're doing a good job, as always.
Thank you. I'll have a discussion.
Linda, just so the inside joke that I gave there, we got one house in Gilbert that some way back in the day built their garage on top of a 48-inch tile. And so we've been dealing with those issues, and it's one of the reasons that we've got to stay on top of those things anytime there's development near any of our tiles.
We had more in Missouri City, but that was one of the districts we were able to turn over to the city control.
Okay.
So they can
deal with it. They're bringing it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Leanne Harder, you're up. We're talking first about the extension regarding Citizen of the Year Award.
Good afternoon. The item before you is Program Citizen of the Year Award. It's on your agenda to make sure that it is something that the current board does want to continue this year, and it is taking direction to go ahead and get started. Would you like me to repeat the information on the memo?
I don't need it repeated. Do either one of you?
I'd like us to continue doing the Citizen of the Year.
I agree with that.
Okay. So we have three yes. I guess that's pretty strong direction here. And is the board still thinking a good recommendation of next county government month, which we celebrate in April? And so the timeline is...
Yeah, so maybe I didn't remember. I would like us to continue to do Citizen of the Year as we've been doing it in the past.
Got it. All right. I'm fine with that also. We've got a yes there, Mia. We're done with that one. Okay, on to the next topic here. Where we have to address with this is the 2019 Ames Day at the Capitol.
This is something that Story County has been doing for the past several years. Ames Day at the Capitol is sponsored by the Ames Economic College Commission and the Chamber of Commerce. It's scheduled for Thursday, March 14th, from 11:30 to 1 p.m. At the Capitol in the morning. It's an opportunity for Story County and businesses and other entities in Story County and Ames to showcase and provide information to what the business or entity is most in about. Generally, we've had a trifold display with graphics and brochures that the department has provided. We have, past couple of years, it's been $300 is what we pay for food sponsorship. There's two sponsorship costs, $700 for day sponsorship, $300 for food. It's just the difference in how Story County is included in the marketing materials, essentially, and our location. Again, staff are seeking direction today whether or not we want to participate again and at what level, so I could go ahead and get us registered and start preparing some materials.
Well, let's see. I think I'm at last here. I think the other two birds weren't available. And I thought our booth location was good. Currently, the chamber has maybe about a dozen participants that pay for booths, so that allows space. And then, of course, there is the Hickory Girls lunch included, and people, the legislators come for the Hickory Girls food, and that's an opportunity to talk to them. So I think the $300 for the booth sponsorship is a good investment to remind the legislators and state staff about Story County and what we've got for the various offerings. This will be right around the time when we're really talking about maybe an open house to help, you know, get that done. So there's new content to hand out also. I would hope that we do it again with the $300 booth.
The separate booth for Story County.
Right. The it's set up in the main atrium.
Mm-hmm.
And
another area.
Okay, super. So yeah.
So I'd like to see us continue what we've done in the past. I would like to see us underscore our work on water quality and watershed assessments, along with what's happening with TILC. That has particular interest to the state because they've invested money in the research park as well, among the other things that we do. The thing I do want to point out is it's County Day at the Capitol on the 13th, so it'll be Ames Day on the 14th. We also have ISAC meetings on the 14th and 15th that you guys may or may not attend. I'll be attending the ISAC meetings, so a lot happening right there.
Thanks.
Okay.
Leanne, have you looked at County Day at all, or is that going to be more coordinated by ISAC? Should we look at doing a booth for County Day also?
I don't even know what's available to individual counties for County Day.
You're so silly.
Yeah, I would say you, your supervisors will have a booth. I don't think individual counties that I'm aware of have booths at County Day. Now, I would say if there's things that we want to make sure as Story County are on display, at County Day, we should reach out and make that happen.
All right.
But it's just interesting to me that it's all happening at the same time.
And Leah, would you be willing or even Deb to see what options would they have for County Day for each other or okay? We good there? Thank you. Do we need a motion on the $300?
I think we just need to have it in the budget. And if you prefer a motion, I can sure make one.
Yeah, let's go ahead and do it.
Okay, so I know that we continue to participate in Ames Day at the Capitol, including purchasing a booth to display information about Story County.
Thank you. Sanders?
Perfect. Golden Heights. Great. Okay. Now we're moving on here to discussion and direction regarding the CUPCOG plan, which is the continuance of government. On the exercises we had and the follow-up and any next steps we'd like to give for direction.
In addition to the memo that I prepared for the board's meeting today, which I'll get to the staff recommendations when I complete the position, I do want to note four additional items that need to be included in after action items. They would be in the general category. As you see in the memo, there are three categories in the after action items. One, first objective falls under organizing and conducting CCMC meetings. The second is elected officials, departmental status reports, and third are other items identified. And these are based on the exercise that was held on January 4th. Identify who will help LEAM, or the County Outreach and Special Projects Manager position, with internal and external communication. Number two, identify an I'm okay system. Marshalltown used Facebook following the incident there this year. Is there a way that, defining a way that Story County employees can call in so that we are aware of their current status. The third one would be having, this is more of a question, but we need to address that. Do we have enough tools to function if computers are not working? And then the TIOs, which are currently Alyssa, Deb Schulroth, and Alyssa, and myself are not present. What happens is that those three entities are not available, and then we don't have the technology, and we have access to employee handbooks and policies to go along with that. And then is there a battery pack to charge cell phones and laptops? And that's really kind of specific to the board supervisors that then all departments to consider. So those would be four additional action, after action items or areas that we would clarify and work towards. Staff's recommendation is threefold. One, establish a CUPCOG working group. Request that the group meet to address all these items in this memo, return of recommendations prior to March 15th. Second, direct staff to work with the elected officials and department heads to identify and measure revisions to the annexes. And those changes would be brought back prior to April 2nd, 2019, along with any recommendations that would come out of the working group, too. So we're amending the plan at one time. And then direct staff to compile a training schedule for fiscal year 2019.
Ooh, 2020,
not 2019.
Okay, yeah, I wondered. So, who do you envision being in this working group?
I think it would be important to include our risk manager, Joey Brockman, facilities management director, our IT director or representative, both Deb and Alyssa, and then someone from the sheriff's office as well.
Now, one of the things we learned at the end, is the need of gas. So I'm looking at Darren here, I'm thinking about if it would be appropriate to include somebody from secondary roads in this also. What do you think, Darren?
I could, but we're mostly diesel, so that doesn't help a lot of other people.
All right. Okay, thank you. All right.
But in terms of keeping the roads, keeping the roads open, that's a good thing.
Right.
That's one of the essential functions. So I would suggest that maybe you should be on that or have somebody on it for that reason.
So two separate issues, right? So continuity of government operations, that's internal to Darren. One of Darren's responsibilities and his staff's responsibility is keeping the roads open.
Mm-hmm.
This is more talking about county government's internal operations and how we're responding to the needs of our individual departments, needs and obligations of our individual departments. As far as fuel goes, so that is more generator-driven. That's Joby. So Joby's the one who handles getting that fuel there. And I would suggest this group would have to, whoever's on it, and I'm not speaking for or against Aaron Moon being part of it, whoever's on it, Keith Morgan better have really close contact. While he's not a county employee, he's vital to us working through our process.
And then the other question I have is, March 15th seems really problematically quick to me for us to get this done.
It is quick, but we really need to be bringing forward changes to the CUCOG sooner rather than later because of the difference in staff at this point, and the annexes need to be modified. And so I'm trying to be cognizant of that, and what will be considered by the board likely will be a closed session.
So that's the meeting date, the Tuesday then. All right. That's our budget hearing then date. Is that correct?
Well, the 12th is our budget hearing date, so you say prior to the 15th, which I would guess
would be the 12th.
That's March 12th. I just think, I appreciate that we've got to have it done. I just think it's too quick.
I agree.
I disagree.
Okay.
This is a very important issue. And I think it's easy to do. We have other things going on. Let's take this. Let's do the emergency planning or disaster planning later. I don't think we have the luxury of doing that. I know it's ambitious, but if people put it as a high priority, I like that.
So may I negotiate for the, the 7th, the 19th, all right? We already talked about County Day. We talked, so some staff will likely be down.
Honestly, I will not have the recommendations ready for the following Tuesday. If the working group finishes up on the 15th of March, the intention was not to have it on. It's to all come back probably a couple weeks after that.
Okay. So I think that's where I got stuck, and I was thinking you wanted to bring it to us on March 12th.
There's a 2-week time period for me to have a week to hold together information and bring it back.
Because it does say it returned with recommendations prior to it.
Yes.
So let's change that. All right. That makes me feel better. We still are responding quickly. You are now acknowledging a change for your working meeting time, and that pushes us beyond budget time. Okay. I mean, if that's good for the other two, given that Liam says she won't be ready until it looks like early April.
Right. That's fine.
All right. Okay.
Did we make a decision or about having Keith Morgan in on this group?
So we don't direct you.
We're
asking Keith to be on the group, if he would like to be on the group, and that we also should have the engineer on the group. That's 7 to 8 people, depending on Keith's brothers. I don't think that's too many for a working committee. We wouldn't push it much further.
And it's a group, not a committee, and there's a difference in whether we have to post or not. Just a sorry.
That's fine. All right.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, so I don't think that these meetings can and should be public, right?
So, all right. It sounds like we've got consensus here for your direction that way. That's good to go on that. Okay. Is there anything else that Aaron,
just for clarification, you do want here?
Are you or someone from
the
department?
And an invitation extended to emergency management, whether that be Keith's availability or Melissa's, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
What you referenced in
either
one of them.
Yeah.
Moving on, anything else that you want us to take a separate look at right now?
Can I just ask one thing? You mentioned a few things you said you would be adding to this memo, and I have a hard time because I wasn't able to keep notes. Would you be willing to put those on it and send a revision? I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. All right. If you have enough direction, move forward. Thank you. All right. We're moving on to the next one here, then, and I believe the final one. Update on the outreach strategies regarding revised flood hazard information for Story County for the unincorporated areas and the CRS annual recertification process, which has, I believe, something to do with, is it you and Jerry that get, are the CRS?
No, CRS is Community Rating System. That's
We're
five. Jerry and I are both certified floodplain managers to the
state. I
think they should be floodplain managers.
But I couldn't remember what the initials were for.
There are a lot of acronyms in floodplain and planning.
Okay.
And engineering. CRS is a voluntary program in which Story County participates for a Class 7 community, and put down and dirty that allows those property owners within unincorporated Story County to receive discounts and flood insurance as a participating community. I did hand out a brochure, and actually, if you'd like some information about CRS, it's in there as well.
Great, thank you.
This is a brochure that I would like to send, have available at an open house that FEMA and the DNR has scheduled for tomorrow evening from 5:30 to 7:30 at the Ames Water Plant. This is an opportunity for FEMA, I'm not sure if FEMA staff will be present. I know the DNR staff will be there, and the contractors that FEMA has hired to update the maps for Story County. We are a countywide map. Flood insurance right now. The jurisdiction for which Story County is responsible for pulling is the unincorporated areas of Story County, so I've shared that several times for sure. So I'd like to have this available tomorrow in the evening, but I'd also like to mail it, have an outreach program for the public in unincorporated areas of Story County to be aware of what's happening in the map. We're in a 6 to 9 month time frame. We have the new maps delivered. We may or may not go through an appeal process, official appeal process, but there are some significant changes to properties within Story County. There are about 1,800 properties. There are about 7,000 properties that have either current floodplain map or currently have floodplain on their property or proposed have floodplain on their property. So you take the new and the current maps and put them together at about 7,000 properties. With the redundancy in property owners, there are about 1,800 property owners. So if we mail this brochure to people own more than one parcel of land, that's why it has 7,000 goes down to 1,800.
Thank you.
There are 7,000 parcels of land.
But there are only 1,800 owners of those property. Thank you.
I'd like to mail this to that mailing list to the significant cost. We've done this in the past when we've updated new maps. I did not expect this to come, this did,
right.
Honestly.
When was the last time we did this?
2008. Yeah. So 2006 and 7 is when we were doing it, and the numbers are significantly less because with the 2008 map, our floodplain enlarged significantly. In addition to that, our standard operating has always been to email a similar brochure to real estate agents, insurance agents, and financial institutions. Darla Ingham with the board's office put that mailing list together for me. That's about 200 names as well. So we're looking at about 2,000 piece of mailing that once you say, yeah, go ahead and do it, we're ready to get started on that. So I'd like to mail that out as well. And then when we do the Our Story winner issue, send copies of this for the libraries and city halls to have as well. It's an opportunity to get individuals then aware of some lunch and learn sessions that I'm hoping that we schedule in this room, where it's simply staff, i.e. me and or Jerry if he's available. For individuals to come in, we'll have both the computer with the map showing, but then the paper copies. We have 100 plus panels, so sheets of paper, a map. Those would be on February 6th, March 7th, and April 3rd for about 2 hours. People can come in, just meet with us, get an idea of what's happening with the property or with your property and so on. There are some significant changes for individuals. There are some houses that are in the floodplain right now that are getting moved, and there are some houses not in the floodplain right now or structures that are being added. And anytime you have a mortgage, you have to have flood insurance. And we want to make sure we communicate this as well as we can with these property owners we have. The benefit of this, we can use this as part of our recertification process for our community rating system, too. We have to annually recertify, and that's coming up February 1st. But I can count this for points for our outreach as well, which is a good benefit. It's a good outcome of getting the new maps well in advance within what we schedule. And this will also help internally in Story County. We are in the process for planning development under the guidance of Jerry as a CFM. We're running a pilot program where planning development is doing the floodplain genetic review. I still have to do the final sign-off because of the ordinance. It does say the county outreach and special projects manager, but it does make sense to have planning and development. Now that Jerry is certified, he is submitting authority. So we're running a pilot project, and we could simply transition in once we've been asked into that simply. We have to amend the ordinance, but having planning development.
I was not aware that our ordinance was both the city and the title. So we have to give a title, but okay, I would like to amend that ordinance.
Okay. We are required by the National Flood Insurance Program to identify the individual with whom or to whom the responsibility lies for issuing the permit. That's a very clear part of the National Flood Insurance Program.
Okay, well, thank you for informing on that. Comments? If not, I'll have one to start. All right. All three of your lunch and learns are 11:30 to 1:30 lunch. Okay. But from an outreach standpoint, that only allows, and they're all three here in Nevada, so they only then are really appropriate or available for the people who can come during lunch. And I don't consider that a good, effective outreach. That's my own opinion, given that we're talking about people in the unincorporated areas from all over the county. So is it possible to do one that might be a 5 to 7 p.m. one and serve, like, snacks? Or something. I get so concerned that we don't reach populations who need the information because we're so restrictive in when we have it, where we have it.
So in the past, I've done that in the evening, and I've had better turnout for the lunch hours. Considerably better turnout for the lunch hour, especially when you run a two-hour time frame. And that's not the only opportunity that individuals have to come in and meet me or Jerry or whomever we're involving in this. It's definitely the board's pleasure. I can work into the schedule. It will be finding another location is definitely possible. I just know of the past when we've done it. The evening meeting, maybe tomorrow night will be a gauge too. But see what the turnout is from 5:30 to 7:30 tomorrow evening. But that might be a little different because the DNR and FEMA are there, and individuals might be wanting to come just to talk to them and pick their ear a little bit.
How many did you have before when you've done this? I mean, of the noon ones or the evening, did you?
Well, you asked me to think back about 10 years now. I know I've sat up in one meeting where I had one person show up at night. I know that definitively. The ones we did here at lunch, we did ones just dedicated for surveyors and engineers. And that we actually had lower turnout than I expected we would.
Yeah.
The property owners, I think, anywhere from 30 to 50.
And they came during the lunch.
Mm-hmm. And then we also, in 2005, we did mainly in 2005, and we did another one in 2007. 2005, we just did a mail. We did not do lunch and learn, and we probably had, within the 2 weeks after we did that mailing, 100 phone calls.
That's a little surprise me, because there were changes, right? That's the whole
thing. Well, that was just a FYI, here in the floodplain. That was not any changes with that one.
And
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
All three of these are in the data, correct? Mm-hmm. What if you did one in Story City and one in Huntsville and one in the state?
I was trying to make it really convenient for me that I have access to this technology to be able to show people, because I can pull up with our GIS, hopefully. We can get that here. At a minimum, I know I can connect my tablet now, too, if I'm on the GIS, where the current floodplain is, and look at the proposed floodplain on property on a bigger scale. If I'm just taking my tablet, so I'm being kind of selfish having carried the maps too, because what we're going to do is take the existing maps, which on our rack, and then what are there like under some panels? I think that's what we have.
The location is good here.
Yeah.
So it's very convenient here.
Question, Leanne. Remind me, so it feels like we had some map updates or revisions a few years ago, and I'm thinking specifically College Creek. Maybe I'm just is Worley Creek. Tell me what that was, because we feel like we went through some of this process specific to that.
Why we did that? Or
well, yeah, just walk me through, because that's what I'm remembering.
In that case, we had FEMA came in and it was a physical map revision of the so it involved both the City of Ames and Short Unincorporated Story County.
Right.
It was amending the maps for Worley Creek. I think you're right, it did take in College Creek as a tributary of Worley Creek as well. We held a bunch of more sessions with that too.
And they were well attended? Anyway,
the one we did here had very attendance than the one we did at Ames City Hall. I think the one at Ames City Hall we had all the contractors at. That was in 2011 as well.
Okay.
Have you considered maybe doing one session, a lunch and learn, and videoing it? And then putting it on the website so that it would be available to people over and over again. And then you have audience and hopefully some questions from that audience. And then people could contact you with specific questions. That seems to be efficient. Allows most people, if they have access to technology, I know some people in the unincorporated areas don't, but it might be a way to reach out and have it be people to get the information at their convenience.
So are you saying that, because right now the way it's designed, there's no formal presentation. It's just people coming in and sitting one-on-one with staff.
So,
all right, so this is not a presentation.
All right.
This is, so when we do the drainage stuff, everybody's interested in how it affects their ground.
Right.
That's what
we're going to
be dealing with.
Right.
And what I'm hearing is it would be an opportunity where you would pull up their parcel on the map and be able to walk it through with them.
And then what would it provide sandwiches or something? Okay, so the last part is,
open house.
I'm getting too literal. Thank you.
So just for purposes of our conversation, yes. And I appreciate this, I would recommend that we go with what you proposed here, but we add a notation in there, and if I missed it, I apologize, but we add a notation that if you can't make it to one of these, here's who you reach out to call. Because we're going to want to deal, so I heard 1,800 landowners and then other interested parties, be it realtors or whoever, we're going to want to talk to any and everybody who wants to talk to us about this, especially the ones I'm hearing. So if they got a existing building that now is not in the floodplain anymore, they're going to love that.
Right.
But the reverse, there are going to be some people that are wanting to question us on why that all of a sudden they're going in. And we need to very clearly be able to explain to them what's happening.
Okay, can I explain the role that the board plays in developing the map?
Really? It makes more sense to me about why this is set up the way it is. I would hope if you start to find that there's people asking where you're going to be in another part of the county at an evening, maybe you can just make yourself available and we can add that. Thank you. Do you need a formal motion if there's any fine?
I just hope the board is well aware that there will be some implications to your current mailing budget. Okay.
It's a couple thousand dollars that we're talking about to do a mailing of a couple thousand pieces. I just ask you to work with Deb on making sure when you get on the list and making sure we can find those dollars.
So real estate agents and developers probably do have email addresses. We have a problem from the place. We just email them in the electronic version. That's a lot of money. If it's just easier to mail them because you're already mailing the 1,800.
So I can ask, that can be part of it too, to do that. Darla has already compiled the list. Rather than doing specific insurance agents or real estate agents, we're trying to do the agency itself. Past mailings, we've done individual agents. Most changed,
are you doing this?
And you just don't have the emails for the managing permission.
And all I'll caution us on that, while I love email and I'm a huge fan of that, when it's some kind of formal government notice, I believe it still belongs in the mail. And I think email is treated differently, or viewed differently.
Oh, I agree. I treat mine differently than that.
Yep.
Okay, thank you. All right, that takes care of information from Leanne, and it moves us on
thank
to...
Leanne.
Yeah, thank you. And it moves us on to, I think, Supervisor Update. I might come here.
Oh, no, you got the Story City Update.
Story City Update, okay.
Notice to amend their
renewal. Thank you. All right, I attached to the notice I got. Just wanted to let you know, give you the opportunity to provide any comments. This is an amendment to their urban renewal plan. And it is $100,000 they're adding on for one project, and this would be the mandatory opportunity they have to provide if any of the other taxing jurisdictions want to come and provide comments. So I just put it on my calendar, and we'll try to make it if in fact, I mean, there's kind of a small amount to an amendment of a plan, but anything that either of you would like to pass on. All right, thank you. Now, we're good, now that I have my
backup.
Okay, all right. So we have got public forum number two. That's all of you. Okay, and the then liaison, assignment committee meeting updates and announcements.
Pass.
Okay. I'm going to AG Resources on Thursday. That's the big committee meeting or the meeting that I've got, and I've got a quick executive committee with HRDA, phone meeting just to discuss part of this moving forward with the staff. We're probably going to end up taking over services in our two contract counties right now at the short phone meeting, and then the full board of the Ames Economic Development Commission early on Friday morning. And that takes me to the end of the week. We're in German. Yes, I know. You people get up at a reasonable time. All right. 7 a.m. Okay.
Okay. Let's see. I've attended Boost and DCAT board meetings this last week. Very interesting. I will be the next 2 days that I sat in the supervisor school. And after that, yes.
Okay.
I'll be there as well.
All right. I'll take a motion to adjourn.
Second.
And we're adjourned, and I forgot it. And today, I have to remember to carry that little gavel around. Okay.